Okay, Tokyo, Australia, Germany.
Go head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! And here we go. This may or may not be a long one. It depends on how we handle it. These programs like yesterday and programs like today are tough to do because it feels decidedly meaningless. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It's Friday on the front porch on the horn, the 8th day of July 2016. Yes. And as if yesterday and the day before was not, and, you know, Jesus, how do we say that yesterday was painful or the day before was painful or the day before that was painful? We're talking about people for whom the universe ended. And, well, it's reminiscent of Lincoln in a way. When he said at Gettysburg, what we say here cannot begin to touch, I'm paraphrasing, cannot begin to touch what others actually experienced. But we have a desire as progressive people, we have a desire as liberal people, we have a desire as decent human beings to try to sort the madness out and make some sense of it in our own minds. Yes, that's right, I am Bob Kincaid, little ray of sunshine. And it is Friday on the front porch, and this is The Horn. And if you want to participate in the ongoing discussion, well, in addition to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group, I highly encourage you to jump aboard the Horn chat room, where you'll be met by Anatole and Jug of Punch and Labor Man and Sentient Being and Soapbox Geezer and Steve from Georgia Stan and Trey and VT Blom. All capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, being a third stage guild navigator, has taken the opportunity today to fold space and become man cave. Yes, must be a decent day. It's cool in the man cave at 80 degrees this afternoon. So there's that. And again, it is Friday on the front porch. If you've never participated, I encourage you to send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, S-P-A-R-K-Y-D-U-N-C, and include in it a message saying Friday on the Front Porch or Horn Malloy Skype chat group or something like that. Okay? And yes, this is independent, non-commercial, non-corporate supported radio. Thanks going out to Randy and to Texas Betsy and to Sylvia and to Gail and Dwayne and Nancy and Michael, those last five being subscribers, for their help overnight, because that means we've only got a fundraising goal of $300 this evening. $300. 10 at 30, 30 at 10, 1 at 300, 3 at 100, 2 at 150, 6 at 50, 12 at 25, 24 at 1250, 48 at 6 1/4. You get the idea. So just if you would like to help out and help, I did some bill paying just earlier today. If you'd like to help out and help keep the program going, run on over to headonradionetwork.com, click on the contribute button, fill out the fields. If you'd like to become a subscriber, we welcome new subscribers. You know, the program works out to about less than 17 cents an hour for our $10 a month subscribers. That's a pretty damn big bargain. If you prefer the United States Postal Service, and Bossman Wayne is very fond of the folks who prefer the U.S. Postal Service, then checks and money orders made payable to The Horn can be sent to The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318 Beckley, Beckley, WV 25801. Okay? Okay. Thank you very kindly. Steve in New York wants to get things started this evening with a $20 challenge. And so Steve will double your money up to the first 20 bucks that comes in, and that'll be a good jump on what we need to do this evening. Thank you very kindly, Steve. Thank you very much indeed. So what was the guy's name in Dallas? I mean, you've got a crowded parade route. You've got vantage points from open areas in tall buildings. It's Texas, so you know that the potential for trouble is there because, well, anybody tall enough to get the money on the table can have a gun in Texas. What was his name? Was it Micah Xavier Oswald? The lone gunman I'm talking about. Or was it Lee Harvey Johnson? I get him confused. Well, in any event, just like 53 years ago in Dallas, we will never know exactly what motivated Micah Xavier Johnson. We can only know what the police there permit the people to know. And of course, it has been reported all over the for-profit media today that he wanted to kill white people, especially white police people. I guess we'll have to take their words for it, because they killed him. This is not to say that people shooting at other people with decidedly deadly military-style Rambo weapons should not be taken out. But it was kind of novel how they did it, wasn't it? They used a bomb robot. Now, you can, if you're a police force in the United States, you can get yourself a robot through all kinds of grant programs through the Department of Defense. So they took, and the bomb robot is usually used to detect bombs, not to deliver them. But in this case, it was used to deliver a bomb to kill the guy. Because even though they had body armor all over them, the police were not willing to go in and put further police officers' lives, which matter, at risk in order to secure the suspect and later hopefully find out exactly why he did what he did. 25 years old, Micah Xavier Johnson was a veteran of our filthy little war against the people of Iraq. Yeah? Where I'm sure he learned all manner of atrocities. And even though he wasn't an infantryman per se, probably had at least passing familiarity with the use of military-grade weapons via his basic training. Everybody has to shoot a gun sooner or later, don't they, if you join the military? Randy telling me, throw the right switches. They're thrown. All of them. Oh, thank you very kindly. Note coming from Steve from Georgia Stan. Hey, Bob, us Steves stick together. Challenge met. So, Steve in New York, your challenge has been met, and we are well on the way, and that means we've only got $260 to raise this evening. Thank you. Thank you very much. I don't feel particularly comfortable with fundraising in the midst of stories like this. But I guess it's necessary if the program is to continue. My apologies. But whatever we know about Micah Xavier Johnson, we will know of his past and not his present and certainly not his future, because the universe ended for him early this morning, too. Might be nice to get a view into the mind of a killer. Yeah, well, might have been nice to have known what was going on in the noggin of one Lee Harvey Oswald, too, but I guess that just doesn't happen much in Dallas. Bomb Robot. The Dallas Police Chief David Brown said, "We saw no other option but to use our bomb robot and place a device on its extension for it to detonate where the suspect was." It's not that you saw no other option. There were other options. You just chose not to choose those other options. It has been said that it's the first time that the police have used a robot to kill somebody, that it is in fact unprecedented, but it is not unprecedented in terms of generally using robots to kill people, because we do that a lot in the United States of America. Well, not in the United States of America. The United States of America does that a lot with our drone program. We, you might recall, have even gone so far as to kill American citizens, juvenile American citizens, with drones. Just saying. So it's not that unprecedented. Yeah. So there's a lot of different ways. Yeah, okay, Steve in New York says they chose their neatest option. Adding, unprecedented? Hardly. You mean like Obama and his drones? Or Bush and his drones? Or why don't we just say the United States military and their drones? Or the CIA and their drones? By the way, for anyone paying attention, we still have a police problem in the United States. Is this our big teachable moment? I don't know. 20 dead 6-year-olds, nothing happened. 9 worshipers in a church in South Carolina, people of color, nothing happened. 49 dead in a disco in Orlando, Florida, bupkis. 5 dead police. I don't know. But everybody knows the basic story, the basic account that we are being given out of last night. It's the stuff that happens off to the side that often provides depth. For instance, today, her credibility in shreds, the Attorney General of the United States, Loretta Lynch, stepped to a microphone and declared in the wake of the killing of five police officers in Dallas that violence is never the answer. That's a direct quote from the Attorney General of the United States. Violence is never the answer. She said that today. You know when she didn't say it? Or any other Attorney General of the United States? After Trayvon Martin was murdered. After the police killed Eric Garner, the Attorney General did not run out and say violence is never... She didn't tell the police violence is never an answer. After the police killed Michael Brown, the Attorney General of the United States did not issue a statement saying violence is never an answer. After the police, within 2 seconds of arriving, blew away a 12-year-old boy named Tamir Rice in Cleveland, the Attorney General did not step to a microphone and say, violence is never an answer. After a pair of police officers who had between them something like five separate investigations of misconduct over the past couple of years in Baton Rouge, Louisiana, blew away Alton Sterling, the Attorney General of the United States did not step to a microphone and tell the police, violence is never an answer. After police in Texas killed Sandra Bland, the Attorney General of the United States did not step to the microphone and tell police that violence is never an answer. And just within the last 48 hours, after a police officer killed in cold blood Philando Castile, the Attorney General of the United States, her credibility in tatters, did not step to a microphone and tell the police in St. Anthony, Minnesota, that violence is never an answer. Because you see, violence is an answer. It's not the right answer. It's not a good answer. But it is, by God, an answer. And it is the answer that up until yesterday, and I haven't seen the updated numbers, but up until yesterday, it is an answer that the police in the United States of America have deployed 500, have given 561 times to people in the United States of America. And that's just the killings. That's not the other violence that the police perpetrate. Does this mean I'm anti-police? No, it does not. Does this mean I bear some animus toward the police? I absolutely do not. But pablum from an ethically challenged attorney general like Loretta Lynch that violence is not an answer, well, coming from her, it is somewhere south of meaningless. You know who needs to say violence is not an answer? Police chiefs. You know who needs to say violence is not an answer? Prosecutors standing before grand juries presenting the cases of killer cops to the grand jury. Steve in New York says, oh, Bob, this is murka. Violence actually is the answer. And there is a sad truth in that. But I read that earlier today and I went, really? Really? You did? Oh, damn. because the only real truth that is available, as far as I can see it, is that we have got to confront and we have got to solve the problem of police violence against people in this country so that what happened last night does not happen anymore. Got a note here earlier in the day from our buddy Michael in Madison. Subject line, my humble thoughts on Dallas. First off, Michael writes, the cop killings in Dallas are terrible. I'm opposed to killing people. Period. Same here. The last time America collectively heard the words sniper and Dallas together, Malcolm X controversially described it as chickens coming home to roost. And feel free to call me names if you wish, but how else can one describe what happened yesterday? The Dallas sniper had served in the Army Reserves and done a tour in Afghanistan, the longest war in American history, a war, not coincidentally, I would argue, begun by the same administration, George W. Bush, Dick Cheney and company, who sent thousands of Americans to be maimed and killed so that we could maim and kill millions of Iraqis, all for a lie. This, by the way, is precisely why we now have ISIS. Thanks, George. Thanks, Dick. Furthermore, America is and always has been a nation of white supremacists, and white supremacists are gun fetishists. I am not saying all the homosexuals who twist the meaning of the Second Amendment are white supremacists. Last night, before Dallas happened, someone was gainsaying me, telling me that the NRA has thousands of black friends. Sorry, I mean black members. But I'm not saying that all NRA members are white supremacists. However, I definitely am saying that virtually all white supremacists are gun fetishists. The Venn diagram would be two concentric circles, with the disturbingly large white supremacist subset, the Wayne LaPierres and Ted Nugents, in the inner circle. Don't believe me? Look up some of the blatantly racist shit these current NRA leaders have said in the past, and then listen to their deafening silence these last two nightmarish days. In her unsuccessful 2010 bid for Harry Reid's Senate seat, Republican Sharron Angle talked of the government becoming tyrannical and stated that if she lost the election, her supporters might need to start, quote, looking toward those Second Amendment remedies, unquote, i.e. using their guns to do what they could not achieve at the ballot box. And that's nothing new or shocking. For years now, the National Rifle Association and gun fetishists generally have been aggressively pushing that recklessly dangerous narrative that the Second Amendment, pay no attention to the well-regulated militia clause, is critical to preserve precisely because the government might someday become tyrannical and the cough, white, cough people will need to fight back. You know, with guns. White gun lovers just love to use that argument. I personally have never heard that message of violence come from Black Lives Matter activists. On the other hand, from the right wing, the NRA, the gun nuts, the paranoid white militia types who blow up federal buildings and seize bird sanctuaries, that message has a well-documented history. It's practically a mantra and a constant threat. You can hear it every day on the radio. Well, it looks like someone finally took that message to heart and decided that the government, specifically law enforcement, had already become tyrannical, that they were already coming for your guns, legally permitted and otherwise, and coming for your lives, and the only way to stop this tyranny was by exercising his Second Amendment remedies. However, last night's defender from tyranny is apparently the wrong kind of people. You know, black people. Tyranny against black people apparently doesn't count as tyranny in this nation. Just like a concealed carry weapons permit carried by a lawful, peaceful black man doesn't count for shit either. America is for the white man. The rules apply only to him. This is nothing new. If a bomb robot hadn't already taken him out, the Dallas sniper would and should obviously be prosecuted to the fullest extent. But so, too, should the rogue badge-wearing murderers of countless black men and women and children. I won't hold my breath, though. Cop killers and killer cops, the former are executed with or without trial, while the latter are placed on administrative leave and face no charges or an acquittal at best. Until that changes, I won't hold my breath for peace. As a nation, we must hold the NRA to account for all the blood on their hands. And that includes the blood of the 5 dead and 7 wounded officers in Dallas. If you think you're reading a rant about gun control, that's on you. I don't think that, Michael. I have not mentioned gun control until now. I'm talking about the message. If we're to believe that guns don't kill people, people kill people, yet emails and servers are not saying certain magic words like radical Islam also kill people, then to be consistent, the NRA's words certainly have killed many people. The NRA told us we need guns to stop government tyranny. Tragically and predictably, someone, an ex-Army reservist, grabbed his trusty sniper rifle and finally followed through on that advice. The chickens came home to roost once again in Dallas. However, I, for one, am not glad. I'm sad. Because if we as a nation were perhaps finally about to engage in a real discussion about Black Lives Matter and police reform, that dim flicker of hope died last night in Dallas. Michael, in Madison. Thank you, Michael. These things are hard to process. And if they're hard to process for the likes of us just sitting out here, how much harder for those involved? The police will be, for how long, who knows how long, in a paranoid frenzy. The Dallas police chief said last night, "We don't get a lot of support. Most days we don't get a lot of support. Let's not let this be one of those days." You're kidding, right? Municipalities spend a boatload fortune on their police. That's support. But to pretend that people are going to go up and say, "Thank you, officer, for shooting a man that you'd pulled over for a taillight being out that, well, wasn't out." Well, thank you. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for keeping us safe. Now, while the white supremacists and the racists will praise the likes of Darren Wilson, who gunned down Michael Brown and then left him to lie in the middle of the street like a killed, rabid dog that had been shot. No, I don't think, no, I'm sorry, there's not a lot of people going to go, "Oh, thank you, Darren, thank you," who don't also wear bed sheets to meetings with, you know, the pillowcases over their heads. The question is, does it have to be this way? The question is there a way out? And I'd be lying to you if I told you that I thought there was an answer. That's the kind of stuff we have to sort out as people. As white people, black people, Asian people, Latino people. As men, as women. Yes, as children. Because the children suffer too. There are parentless children in Dallas tonight. A little child in Minnesota is missing a man described as always having been a father to her. And how many others? How many others? You know, maybe it sounds a little bit crazy. But you know, If we took the guns away from everybody, Yeah, oh, by the way, lots of photos last night of Dallas police officers running around with high-tech military-grade weapons. What did it avail them? Nothing. They wound up having to use a bomb robot. I suspect what is about to follow will be a little bit intense. It's 30 minutes into the program now, 6:30 here in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone. Thanks going out to Nick. Thank you very kindly, Nick, for jumping in. We have now only $340 to go in fundraising. I do appreciate it. We all do. That's how we keep this going. But last night, what was meant to be a truncated program in the first place got further truncated when the internet went right smack dab in the middle of a conversation with our buddy the Angry Indian. So before we fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable that is Friday on the front porch, let's talk again with Angry and sort of maybe kind of, if that's at all even humanly possible, pick up where we left off. Hey, Angry.
Hey, my man.
You okay?
Yeah. Oh.
No.
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 And it's okay to say no, I'm not.
You know, no, I'm going to say it regardless. You know, I mean, no, I'm not all right. You know, after we got cut off yesterday, you know, which was, you know, bad enough. And of course, you know, the knee-jerk thing is to assume that somebody was listening and pulled the plug. I mean, you know, it happens. But, you know, it's been way worse since I spoke to you just yesterday. You know, I mean, I'm still trying to figure out. I mean, you know, Ms. Angry Indian is still trying to figure out, is it three cops that are dead? Is it five? Is it, you know, seven shot, two shot, 12
everything,
shot?
Everything I've read says five police officers dead, seven wounded. Some are still clinging to life. The number may go up. It was four Dallas police officers and one Dallas area rapid transit police officer.
Transit police officer. Yeah, and that's the one that they're talking about the most because I believe he just got married. And, you know, all of this is unfortunate. And I hate to have to preamble anything like this, but I'm going to because this is a world of Trump. And it's not to blame him specifically. He's just taking advantage of what the fuck already came before him. But I have to fucking, you know, say before I say anything else, I am not fucking cool with these fucking cops being shot. Okay? Anyone who's ever listened to my goddamn show or read anything I've ever fucking written or heard me on shows like yours knows full goddamn well that I'm one of the people who's considered an Uncle Tom punk ass because I don't advocate for this sort of fucking action. I don't. But I will say this, though. You know, this is somebody who is a fucking Army reservist who has served in Afghanistan. He's one of yours. He's an NRA type. He's one of yours. I'm not talking about you, Bob Kincaid.
No, no, no.
The listeners of this show. But for those motherfuckers in Texas that are whining right now about, you know, take the guns from the niggas and all this kind of shit, you're the motherfuckers that was advocating for people to be strapped.
Well, look who got taken in lickety split right off the bat.
Yeah.
Black dude who decided to, and, you know, go figure, who decided to open carry his Freedom Protector. Mm-hmm. In a peaceful march over police violence, well, it immediately goes out, the shooting starts, and we've got a picture of a Negro with a gun.
A long gun, yeah.
And you know what? You know what he did? Gun. He ran. He ran to the police and said, "Don't kill me. I'm just a black guy with a gun." They went, excuse me, pardon me. Okay, go about your business, citizen. Well, no, not really, because he claims that that he was lied to, and of course he was labeled. You know, the Dallas Police Department tweeted out, "This is one of our suspects. Please help us find him." Jesus, jumping Christ! What if some white militia member or cop had found him first? He would not be alive because he was a black man with a gun.
And he still took a chance going and saying, it's me. Because it certainly didn't save Troy Davis when he went to the fucking police and said, I'm not the person that you're looking for. They executed him on no evidence any goddamn way.
Yeah.
No evidence. And he went to straighten it out, figuring, I didn't do anything wrong. I have, you know, common sense on my side and the law on my side. And they fucking burned him anyway because a cop died. And they needed to blame somebody. And when they found out that it was somebody else, they're like, well, we already went too far. We don't want to, you know, embarrass the state and have this guy be able to sue any goddamn buddy or anything else.
Well, but hold the damn phone. He turned in his weapon at the police department, too. I'm not seeing anything about where they gave him back his gun.
No, they probably didn't. No. But it was long gun, you know, long dick, black man, long gun. You got to be careful. You got to protect the women and you got to protect them, right? So now they know that it's not him. But the police are still not, you know, recalling the data that they put out that's been retreated more than 41,000 times saying that this is the guy.
Yeah.
So how long before he gets threats and what have you? You know, because people are not going to believe, oh, yeah, well, you know, because he's still one of them and he was at the protest and he had a long gun. They kept talking about that, the long gun. That's why I said long dick, black man, long gun. Because this is the type of shit, as Robert Mapplethorpe, the photographer, the late photographer, pointed out, that they fucking fear. These are the two goddamn things. This bullshit that's been going on that led to this has been fear of black men who really have not responded like this very often. But he's one of theirs. If he learned how to use a goddamn weapon, it's because they sent his black ass to Afghanistan to fucking do colonialism for them, and he learned how to fucking do it. Obviously, whatever his specialty, I don't know what his billet was.
His MOS wasn't even anything related to carrying a gun. I can't remember offhand, but.
Yeah, see, not like that.
Carpentry, drywall.
He was a carpenter?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So he wasn't at all like the former Navy SEAL, Christopher, I can't remember his last name, the one that went mad in L.A.
No.
Killed two people, and they shot up a car with two elderly fucking Latinas who were delivering newspapers. They still never got their car back, by the way, and they were never fucking officially apologized to either. Both of those women were shot up because the fucking cops had heard that that wasn't even the fucking make a vehicle that they were looking for at the goddamn time. And fucking they just lit it up, shot these two people up. And what did we keep hearing? Well, we got to understand that the police are nervous. I mean, look at what they have to deal with every day. Look at what they go through. Yeah, but see, it's this type of nervousness that when you got a man fucking pinned on the fucking ground, you didn't shoot him six fucking times. Or when you have a man in a fucking vehicle with a woman and a child and he's sitting in the driver's seat and says, I'm reaching for my ID, when he is legally carrying and has his fucking carry permit on his person. No, the fucking officer shoots him and then keeps yelling, fuck. Talking about you basically did this to me.
Yeah, you made me shoot you.
You made me shoot you. Tries to turn the whole fucking thing around. And I got to say this, that black woman, his widow. And I know somebody's going to say to me, oh, well, they weren't legally married. Fuck you. These women are widows. Common law goddamn wife, she's a fucking widow. And she kept her motherfucking cool to protect herself and her child. Because she knew that this nervous punk-ass son of a bitch hiding behind a fucking uniform and a badge was getting ready to shoot her and her fucking kid. And this is what it is to be black in America. This is what it is to be black in America. And we have Loretta Lynch who says, oh, well, violence cannot be the answer.
No, violence is never the answer.
Well, it's right. It's never the answer. But it seems to be the answer, though, when we get shot. And then we have to have sympathy for the fucking police officer. They did this after, I can't even remember his name.
I mean, how dysfunctional is it? It's the equivalent of you know, when a man beats his wife and then says, "See what you made me do."
See what you made me do. Yeah, it's the exact same goddamn thing. But even then, for a long time, and let's be straight up about this, perspectives. For a long time, you would have women, and you still would hear women defend a man like that. Now, I will say here, and I don't give a fuck if anybody likes it or not, you will see a lot of domestic violence fucking cases, at least in the hood any goddamn way, in poor fucking communities, where they're really just having loud goddamn arguments. They're having loud arguments over money, over the disciplining of the children, over the fact that this man is despondent and fucking not coming home. And when he does come home, he's acting like he doesn't want to fucking be there. You know, she is working her ass off, trying to, and she's angry. So they're both fucking frustrated by things that they really are not necessarily in control of, that limit their fucking choices, and they take their frustrations out on each other. Now, we can have a situation today where a fucking couple will have a loud disagreement over, like, say, a paycheck or the lack of one. And fucking the police will come, and because the police have now come, he's got to go. Right? There's the procedure. You know, he has to leave even if she was the physical aggressor or even if there was no physical aggression.
No, it's just a race to the telephone.
It's a race to the telephone. So he now usually has to go unless she does something really fucking out of hand while the police are there. That's usually how it goes. The man is assumed to be the aggressor. And we will say, well, you didn't even really have a right to yell at her, no matter how angry she got. I know a fella who right now, he's homeless because of this shit. In the fucking presence of police officers, and I don't know how many of their neighbors, his wife attacked him. Because he was fucking around with somebody else, and she got mad, and it got verbal, and then, you know, she told him to get out, and then it was like, well, you can't leave, you're not going to leave us, and then get out, but then you can't leave. This is an emotional situation. Well, she totally bashed him, and, you know, nothing was done. And the idea was, well, the justification was, well, I got beat up by my husband 3 years ago, so fuck him. And, you know, well, my mother got beat up for years, so I don't give a fuck about what happened to this guy. He deserved what the fuck he got. Now, what I just said, of course, is an extreme. It is not at all to you know, make any light of or
no,
to explain
there's a polar opposite to it. And I had occasion once upon a time in my professional life to become well acquainted with it, in which, because I did it more times than I care to think about, where, you know, you were talking about the hood. Well, I'll talk about the holler.
It's just the hood.
where you know, she makes the call. The cops show up. They take him away. And as they're taken away, she's hollering, no, 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 no. And so the next morning, she's in at the magistrate's office trying to withdraw the charges. And I cannot tell you the number of times that I sat down with women and said, listen, here's the statistics. He's going to beat you something on the order of 7 times before you either get disgusted and leave or he kills you. You choose.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, we're talking about emotions, and you have patterns of abuse and all that. And again.
But this is. I fear we've kind of wandered off into the weeds a little bit.
No, no, no. I was coming back to it. What I'm trying to get to is we have a perspective now that says we will not tolerate what even looks like abuse against women domestically. We will not even let you think about it. We've come to the conclusion that we have allowed this to go on for too long. So now we're not even going to allow you to even breathe, whisper, or even point your finger at a female in a tense situation, because that automatically means the way that the mindset is now, the way that the meme is, the paradigm, you are about to abuse the fuck out of her, even when that's not the case. That's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about two people who are not listening to each other, and it got loud, and the way other people perceived it from the outside was, we've gotten to the point where we're not tolerating it. For so many generations, we watched this. What I'm saying is, let's look at police brutality in the same way.
In the same light.
In the same light. We have a situation here where you have men who have justified their bullshit through religion, because it's on paper. They've justified their bullshit through the idea that men are in charge because, well, we're the only ones to do anything. Well, you don't let us do anything. Oh, that's not the point. We do it because we're the ones that are strong enough to do it, and we have the mind to do it. We have everything to do it. Of course, education, training, and a social system that says that you have a right and the ability and obligation perhaps even to be active, to be involved, to be integrated totally within the society. Women for a long time have not. And until women got a certain level of political fucking and intellectual power, they could not really make these arguments without going to fucking war with men. And I mean literally go on the fucking wall with men. So what I'm saying is we have a paradigm here that says that it is okay for fucking cops, even if they're not white, to kill black men, to kill Native American people. They have a right to do this because this has been the paradigm here for fucking forever. And the white society, just like the male fucking society, does not want to say to itself, we need to motherfucking say, wait a minute, this shit was always goddamn wrong, and we've always taken advantage of this, and in a way,
Angry, not to cut you off, but in a way, we need some, and maybe this is just way too nerdy for the rawness of the situation, we need some historical perspective. Agnes reminded me of this earlier today. The West Virginia State Police were formed out of what were called the Baldwin Thugs.
Okay, I know where you're going.
Private hired mine guards who were hired to oppress people who worked for the coal companies and dared to try to stand up on their hind legs and demand that they be treated like human beings, black people and white people alike. The Secret Service was founded out of the Pinkertons. Who also became notorious as armed thugs for corporate America. The first actual police force was in, what, Philadelphia?
I'm not sure. Some say Philadelphia, some say Boston. Two other historians have told me that I know personally that is Chicago, because everybody is trying to basically make a first, but there's been actions of private detectives that became official.
U.S. Marshals were agents of the court.
Initially.
Right. And then also in the midst of this, we must remember that part of the reason for the drafting and the passage of the Second Amendment was to empower runaway slave hunting militias with the color, what's referred to legally as the color of state law, so that when a slave left the plantation, literally, that the state could hunt him down, and the slave owner, the plantation owner, could thereby be subsidized by the state in seeking the return of his property. So there's, you know, the history of policing is not a noble history. Okay? The early work of the Pinkertons was in the effort to try to keep Abraham Lincoln alive to get inaugurated. But beyond that, in ever so many instances, the history of the police is a history of oppression. Okay? Here's one. I just saw Anatole in the chat room mention the name Smedley Butler. Well, Smedley Butler is known for his famous declaration that war is a racket. But what is seldom mentioned is that Smedley Butler actually left the Marine Corps for a time and went to work as the police commissioner for the city of Philadelphia. And apparently was so dissatisfied with that he turned around and went back to the Marine Corps. If I recall the timeline correctly.
Well, he ended his career in the Corps.
Well, he did, yeah. So he left and he came back. But the point that I'm trying to make is that it's not like, for the most part, it's not like policing in the United States went sideways somewhere. It's not like it got worse. For God's sakes, look at the number of comparisons or the number of times that the comparison has been drawn and trotted out of 1968 in the current Democratic political campaign. Well, okay, 1968, You know, it wasn't the people rioting in Chicago. It was a police riot.
It was a police riot.
The police rioted against the people.
A Democrat.
look at Bull Connor in Birmingham with his dogs and his fire hoses. Look at the Alabama State Police on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Selma.
But look at where you're going with this, Bob. It's not any different than what I was saying. But see, what I'm saying was, okay, you've clarified it in a sense that yes, the police have always been bad and so on. But why have they been this way?
What I'm not saying they've always been bad in specie. I'm saying that they have always been a representative of some or another form of entrenched and often corporate power.
Okay, yes, that's a given. But what I'm trying to get to is, and why I said with that long thing that seemed like it was totally unrelated, but I was hoping that all of us could relate to this. Those of us of a certain age group remember hearing older men around us say, you have a right to do whatever the fuck you want to do with your wife or really any other woman that you are paying for. If you're paying the bills, you have a right to do whatever. That was a mindset that women defended. Because that was the paradigm. Then the paradigm changed, and I have to say this because enough white women became lawyers and so on and became administrators and were in positions where they could change the paradigm. That is why it changed. And as the education got better, then people started to realize we shouldn't have done this. And the knee-jerk reaction was to even say that you're upset with a female, you can get into a situation. What I'm saying is that the only reason the police on the Daily in Chicago in 68 were able to do that, why Bull Connor was able to do what he did, breaking somebody's nose on goddamn fucking news film, is because the majority of white people around the fucking world who were watching that shit said, yeah, go ahead and do it. They approved of it. Get those unwashed motherfucking yippies. They stink any goddamn way. They refuse to fucking bathe and yank them up. Even when the trial went down, how many people fucking, if we're going to talk about hidden history, how many people know that the only fucking black man that was on trial and gagged in the motherfucking courtroom? Chained to his fucking chair and gagged in the goddamn courtroom. A black fucking panther. You hear about the Chicago 8 when it was really the Chicago fucking 9. Because niggas don't matter. This is what I'm saying. Even in the white left, they say the Chicago 8, not the Chicago 9. We hear about Goodman, Swerner, and Cheney, not Cheney, Goodman, and Swerner. We're talking about a mindset here. The cops are able to do what the fuck they're able to do because the vast majority of white people either, most support it, who don't want to admit it. They support it in the sense that, well, if you don't keep these niggas in line, I'm going to lose my house. My daughter's going to be attacked. I'm not going to be able to get a job now because I have to compete with all these white guys. I mean, all these black guys. That's what it comes down to. So it doesn't mean that they necessarily approve of the violence, but they don't want to necessarily see it happen. But they also want police to have this fucking power because the idea is if that they don't have that power, then we don't have any fucking power. That's what I'm talking about. What I'm saying is if we can fucking change willfully the goddamn mindset that says that women should not be fucking attacked and treated like shit, why can't we get to the same goddamn fucking track when we got a black president and a black fucking, the second black head of the fucking Justice Department to say it is totally motherfucking fucked up to simply fucking feel that black people can be target practice. They use black people for target practice in police stations in the United States. That is a fact. The state of Florida, the state of fucking Pennsylvania.
Okay, can I assay an answer to that question, Angry? Because in fascist and proto-fascist regimes, it is not okay to criticize the people who do the enforcers. It's not okay.
No, they're gods.
Okay, I'll wander off into the ancient history weeds for a minute and say that the Caesars did all kinds of things to all kinds of people, but you know who they made a point of not pissing off? The Praetorian cohort.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, if I can fall back on my my dipped by the heel religious upbringing for a moment, you know, what is it, Matthew 26? It's part of the Passion, where, and said Jesus unto them, unto him, put up thy sword, those who live by the sword shall perish by the sword. Now, what's interesting in that statement is he's telling Peter to put up his sword. But you know what? There's a bunch of other guys with swords. We are told that they were centurions or whatever, the Roman infantry, occupiers. They were all standing around there too. And Jesus did not say, put up your sword, those who oppose authority with a sword will perish by the sword. Those words were intended for the other people with swords too. That when you are sitting on a powder, you know, if we can advance the technology for a minute, if you're sitting on a powder keg lighting matches, you're gonna get blown up. All right? So, you know, I think this begins with rethinking why the police are running around armed like a military.
Yeah, but we know why. You know, when, like you were talking about earlier, about the history of it. We can go back to the war on drugs, which we now know was the fucking bullshit. Well, we always knew it was bullshit. Anyone who looked at the numbers knew it was bullshit. But now we have people from the fucking Nixon administration who are old now and trying to clear their fucking records, you know. And they're like, oh, well, by the way, you know, we knew it was bullshit, but it was a way to arm the cops by, you know, basically accusing black people of being in, you know, control of the fucking drug thing. That it was all their fault, and that way we were able to militarize the police. That was the plan. Because you got what? The Comey, or whatever the fuck it is, the damn federal law that you cannot have the U.S. military operate on U.S. soil.
Posse Comitatus.
Yeah, thank you. For good goddamn reason.
Which was a response to Reconstruction.
Well, it was a response to Reconstruction, but you also got to consider these people were fucking naturally educated. They knew world history. The motherfucking average American here still thinks that Lincoln was the first goddamn president of the United States in Oklahoma. That's not me. That's what the goddamn Associated Press report. They knew that if you have a standing goddamn fucking army and they have any real goddamn fucking control and they have a political agenda of their own, you are not in. You don't have a civil fucking society. We can look
well, and see, and see, right now, a militarized police force in the United States is a way around Posse Comitatus.
It's a way around it. But see, the thing is, it wasn't so much so that the military could take over as much as it was to police the motherfucking resistance from Indians who were fucking tired of getting pushed off their goddamn land and not having any fucking water, from black people tired of working for fucking 3 cents a goddamn day. And then if we do get a bank, if we do get a series of businesses like what happened in Tulsa, Oklahoma, you know, or in Rosewood, Florida, they come in and burn the whole goddamn thing down by saying that a white woman was attacked, even though nobody knows exactly who this white woman was and who it was that supposedly attacked her. They didn't need to know that. They came out of the fucking beer halls. They came out of their goddamn from under their fucking beds and shit, you know, drunk and despondent because they don't have any goddamn thing, and went and killed as many fucking people as possible. This is historical. Now, I'm not saying that that's any sort of a justification for what this young man did. But let's just be honest. Look at how they're reporting about this. His middle name is Xavier, but they're making sure to point X and not even mention his last name. They're calling him Mika X. Malcolm X. Mika X. Bad nigga that said he couldn't stand white people, even though that's not really what he said. You know, here's another one, angry. And like you said, and a lot of black people, of course, and some whites that I know around me are asking this, how come we don't have any footage or any of the audio on the news of him making these comments, of him making these statements? I'm not denying that he did it, but we'll never get to speak to him because they made sure that he will never be able to testify. He knew that when he did that, that there was no way he was going home. He knew that. He knew that. He went, as we would put it, all out. But of course, he also put a fucking target on the back of every goddamn black man in this country.
As we have seen by the fact that a Trumpanzee started waving a gun
in Portland.
In Portland, right at a Black Lives Matter protest.
Right under my motherfucking nose. No, I was not at the protest. I was on my way into the fucking studio. And, you know, somebody on the bus told me that, this happened. And I'm just like, you got to be fucking kidding me. And, you know, the first thing that people who had heard it for the first time when he was relaying the story to me, the first thing that, came out of most people's mouths was, this is Portland. This can't happen here.
Oh, yes, it can.
And I'm like, you got neo-Nazis all over the state. What the fuck do you mean? And in town. I'm like, what are you talking
about? How quickly we forget Malheur.
Oh, they totally forgot about that. Nobody wants to talk about that. Do you hear the Trump campaign talking about Jerry DeLimas on trial for sedition right now? He's their fucking campaign manager.
Yeah, I mean, not so much.
How many more fucking links to the far right that you goddamn need? And then I believe I sent this to you. It's being reported by, I think I saw it from the ADL. The neo-Nazis have formed themselves a bit of a union, and they're going to be at the GOP convention armed. They're going to make a point. They're going to go and do a beer push. They're going to go and try to take over the fucking party. They're going to try to take over the party because Trump, who, I be honest with you, Trump is a jerk. And Trump is a bigot. But I don't think that he actually has the motherfucking brains to be a real fucking Nazi.
No, he's just
I don't think he's smart enough.
He's just the son of a Klansman who heard it growing up all his life.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he certainly leans that way. And if he can get a piece of ass like that and he can make, you know, $100,000 on the deal, he'll do it. If he can get on TV for 5 minutes behind that shit and get some positive press, he'll say whatever the fuck he needs to say to these fuckers. And if they're in power, he'll do what the far right does in every goddamn country. They'll be just like the Vichy fucking French. How can I help you? How can I help you? You know, how can I help you? So this motherfucker who knows nothing about any goddamn thing goes all the way to fucking Scotland and then tells them, yeah, well, we voted him out when Scotland voted to fucking stay in. He knows nothing, but he knows that there's a lot of neo-Nazi motherfuckers in the Scottish National Party, though. The fascist.
He's a marketer, okay? He knows marketing. But from a tangential standpoint, one other thing, and I started thinking about it in terms of what happened in Minnesota with Philando Castile, but kind of doubling down on it, I got to thinking about something I saw coming, a news story the other day, where some governmental flunky in Israel declared that Mark Zuckerberg has blood on his hands because Palestinians get to use Facebook.
Yeah, that was yesterday. That was yesterday, yeah.
And now you've got the, you know, it wasn't just video put up. It was live streaming on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And that was the only way that Diamond Reynolds knew that what her truth was going to get out.
Well, come on. You had the cameras, the body cams fall off these other cops, and then
that's where I'm going. How much longer until some Republican stands up in the House or Senate and says, you know, this immediate access to live streaming video is good for our freedom?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. As long as it's not helping them, yeah, they're going to argue against it. Yeah, they're going to argue against it.
So few details. So was the guy in Dallas, you know, Lee Harvey Johnson, Micah Xavier Oswald, whatever, was he yelling to the police that he wanted to kill white people and white cops? And because, you know, in all the news stories, according to the Dallas police, he said he wanted to kill white people and white cops. Not he wanted to kill white cops and white people. So if he was yelling across the parking garage, is that going to show up on any of the body cam, in any of the body cam microphone audio? If it was on a telephone, yeah, because they negotiated for hours.
Mm-hmm. Where's this audio?
Where is it? Now, this is without getting all Alex Jones. There is no harm to national security in letting the people know how it went down.
Yeah, but they still don't want to talk about what happened in Orlando fully. It turns out that people have been having sex with this motherfucker and that he found out that one of these men was HIV positive.
Yeah.
And this is how he dealt with it. You know, and anybody who's ever known anybody who was an angry, closeted motherfucker, you know that they take their fucking anger out on everybody. They drink. They do goddamn drugs. They abuse their female fucking partners. And when their fucking boyfriend tells them he doesn't want them anymore, they fuck him up and then start taking shit out on other people. I know this because I've seen it. Every gay person I know fucking is like, we know that that fucking guy was gay because of the way that this shit went down. He wasn't fucking political. If anything, you're the one that pointed to help me fucking realize that his father's connected to what?
Probably the CIA. Yeah.
Those broadcasts that he's making out of Florida, and we all know what goes on in Florida when it comes to broadcasting. I mean, you know, you don't have to be an Alex Jones freak to fucking realize that bullshit. That's a matter of the fucking public record. You know, they still won't talk about that. We still haven't talked about John Hauser, the one who went nuts down there in the fucking movie theater. We're still not talking about that Dylann Roof the way we should fucking be talking about this.
Oh, and by the way, Robert Deere just doesn't exist anymore. The guy who shot up the Planned Parenthood clinic. Oh, he was just crazy. He wasn't a white domestic terrorist. No.
You see, you know, anytime you start talking about the actual fucking numbers, and, you know, Bob, I do this all the time. I send people the FBI goddamn stats. Why? Because that's what I fucking use. I use Interpol fucking stats. I use any public fucking resource from an official, from an official source when I can. And when you look at all of the fucking numbers coming from them, not some wild ass goddamn, you know, left wing radical commie Marxist, whatever the fuck, talking about what the government is goddamn saying, the people who fucking do this and non-governmental agencies, the majority of fucking terrorist attacks that have occurred in the United States and on terrorist soil have occurred by fucking white supremacists, Christian evangelical extremists, and anti-abortion fuckers who say that they are in the army of God.
I'm going to say something right now that will probably say more about me than my powers of prognostication. But I looked at Agnes last night and said, you know, if this was a black guy, we'd already know it. And I was just waiting for waiting for the Muslim name. I was just because, frankly, I expected it to be a white guy with a gun.
I did too.
Because it just made too much. But the thing is, the fact that it was cops being killed, that could have gone either way. But the fact that he wasn't just sitting there blazing away at black people marching in the crowd, I began to move toward the idea, nah, it's probably a black guy.
Well, it was either one of two things. Because you remember, I believe it was Minneapolis. Where Black Lives Matter was performing an action in front of a police station. And three white supremacists shot several people in the crowd. It happened two nights in a row. And, you know, nothing was done. I mean, how the fuck do you have people get shot by white supremacists in front of a police station and you don't have the FBI down there the next day?
Well, sooner or later, this is going to bounce onto the radar. This actually happened yesterday. Bristol, Tennessee, did you see this?
I was going to read you one about, it's the same one I was going to mention.
Bristol, Tennessee, 37-year-old Lakeem Keon Scott, black guy, started taking pot shots at passing cars with, you know, white folks in them and police officers. He was armed, according to the Richmond Times-Dispatch, with a pistol and a semi-automatic type rifle of some sort. He shot up the Days Inn lobby on Volunteer Parkway in Bristol, and he hit the clerk on duty, and then he started shooting at passing vehicles. He managed to shoot and injure one police officer, and then the police, you know, killed him dead.
Mm-hmm. Which, again, you know...
They didn't kill him. He survived, and they took him to a nearby hospital.
Well, he'll be lucky if he makes trial, you know... But he's burned. His life is over. He's done. He's done.
Without being thought in any wise justifying anything, which I am not, in any population of significant size, there is a statistical likelihood that not everybody is going to adopt a common philosophy. In this case, nonviolence. I remain committed to nonviolence. I think the cops should be nonviolent, and I think the people should be nonviolent, too. Uh, uh, I And I'll probably, after the program's over, I'll saddle up my unicorn and ride on down the road. But, you know, there are places where the police make every effort to be nonviolent, or at least not to engage in gunplay. Australia, Germany, Sweden.
Well, see, again, we disagree on this because we've talked about this.
No. I understand there's a racial disparity component.
Well, it's not just that. I mean, cops are brutal in a lot of places for a lot of different reasons.
And they're brutal, but they are differently brutal angry. There are not 561 police killings of citizens in any of the countries that I named. There are in the United States.
There are in the U.S., yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
Hey, it's been a great conversation, but I've got to get the front porch started, my friend.
Yeah, and I'm sorry about that, but, you know. I just wanted to get, you know, to talk to you before the week was out, because when we left off, you know, what happened in Dallas hadn't happened yet.
Right.
And you and I, when we usually do talk about these things, it's in the hope that somebody out there listening will not do what went down in Dallas yesterday. So, you know, I wanted to, you know, to come back in and finish that conversation, because I don't want anybody to say, oh, well, you know, all these goddamn lefties are okay, but what happened? That's a fucking lie.
No, I mean, yeah, that goes back to, and I've told the story before, Chris Hedges came and spoke to the Seneca 2 group down in the Kanawha Valley, a wonderful, wonderful group, dear to me. And I remember broadcasting it. I streamed it. I streamed it live from the campus of West Virginia State University. And he stood in that, and it was when, I forget which of his books he was promoting, but he stood in that auditorium and said, consider what's being done to Appalachia. If anybody in this country has a right to start shooting back, it's the people of the Mountaintop Removal Sacrifice Zone, but they don't. And I remember feeling a chill go down my spine and going, God damn, don't say that. I mean, because even the bare suggestion can be enough.
Yeah.
By the way, if I get around to it, I got some mountaintop removal news that ain't good later today. But Angry, thank you again for the conversation. I do appreciate it.
All right. Peace, my brother. And hey, anybody out there, if you can, please visit headonradio.com. And please try to keep the show on the air. Peace.
Thank you, Angry. Have a great weekend. Our buddy, the Angry Indian. And I've got good news to report. Thank you very kindly. Thank you very kindly indeed to Pamela, who just jumped in a big way to help the week end, not, you know, down in an echo chamber. Thank you very, very kindly, Pamela. Our fundraising goal is now $40. $40. So, again, thank you very kindly. So, oh dear God, note coming from Jack in Shreveport, subject line, video evidence. It's already started. Limbaugh this afternoon talking about the videos of the police shootings as if they were made to incite violence, not made so people would be believed. He also had some freak named Heather McDonald pimping a book and saying that Black Lives Matter had assassinated people and that the Freddie Gray killing was a hoax. Truly disgusting, Jack says. Then you got this Joe Walsh crap and on and on. We'll get to that, too. Jack says this kind of garbage needs to stop. I would even suggest, Jack, that it extends past needs to stop and way up into must stop. Because if it doesn't, well, there's a lot about this country to make you think that we're already circling the drain. And if it doesn't, we're going to stop thinking it and start knowing it. So, a brief break while we fire up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable. I encourage you to participate. Lots of folks wanting to participate. You're welcome to as well. Just if you've never done it before, send a contact request on Skype to Sparky Dunk. SparkyDunc. If you need to, participate by telephone, we do have the stress line for you, 304-663-4676. 304-663-4676. That spells horn. 304-663-horn. This is listener-supported conversation radio. This is The Horn. We'll be back on Bob Kincaid.
Cause you'll only sing the blues down in Dallas. Take it from me, don't go and cry. Just look and see.
Oldie but an appropriatey, Jimmy Buffett from A1A, 1974, and Dallas. Friday on the front porch on the horn for the 8th day of July, 2016. Thanks, everybody, by the way, for tuning in last night as I sat in for Mike Malloy. I really appreciate it. It's great to have the company. Well, it's that time. We've got the Friday on the front porch Horn Malloy Skype chat group fired up under the capable administration and moderation of Sparky. Hey, Sparky.
Hey, Bob. How you doing?
Pretty good. Sounds like it was a little windy in the man cave.
Oh, can you hear the fan?
Oh, is that the fan?
Yeah.
I thought that was the high desert wind.
No. It's one fan. It was. I had it on because even when it's 80 degrees, it's nicer with the fan. But I'll do without it for now.
Sorry, didn't mean to impose any misery.
No, it's no misery. The sun just came out. It's been overcast all day. That's why it's been so cool.
Ah. And
which is kind of nice. I was getting these 100-degree days, I kind of get cabin fever being shut in underneath the air conditioning all the time.
Well, so what is your man cave cutoff temperature?
When the thermometer on the back porch is 90 degrees, I don't go. I think that's too hot. But if it's under 90, I can withstand it with the fans going.
So this is downright balmy.
Yeah, overcast, balmy. Just a one day respite, I think.
Well, we've had it
2 days.
You know, there's nothing like a 1,000-year flood to make people wince at the first raindrop. And we've had thunderstorms all day here and pouring down sideways rain. So, oy, like we need it.
Oh, I know that. I mean, when we got that flash flood, it was right after that, a week or two after that, there was another storm come in. And everybody was freaking out. And they were still giving sandbags away down at the county building. Down the road, but I said, it ain't gonna flood. Not since they cleaned out all the trash in that creek bed.
So, well,
that's what happened. People get nervous.
Well, for Friday on the front porches like this, it's kind of tough to get into the swing of things. But I presume that a lot of people have a lot of opinions this evening. So let's.
Go ahead. Let's go to Frank right off the bat. I mean, he's...
Yeah, Frank, welcome in.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Can you hear me?
I can. You sound great.
All right. Thank you. I'm pleased to be a part of this. I've been trying to figure out how to run this computer stuff, and it's taken me a while.
But you're doing fine so far, so fear not.
Cool.
You're not going to tell him the other thing. He's blind.
Oh, I'm legally blind. I can't read. I can't see the screen. So I have to use keyboard commands. I don't know all the keyboard commands for Skype. So I was able to answer the phone. That's pretty much the extent of my ability.
Then even more kudos go out to you, and we're awfully glad to have you on board.
Frank?
Yeah.
Hi, Frank. It's Rick. I did a little search on Google for Skype keyboard commands, and I think to decrease the volume, you hit a option. You hit the down arrow, I think. I think that's all you have to do.
No, but to mute the microphone.
Oh. Release. Wait. Control up arrow. Yeah. It's like a binary. It's a binary operation. Up, the up arrow increases the volume. Down arrow decreases it.
Okay.
So you can kind of gradually phase down the sound by muting it that way.
Okay. Thanks, Rick. I appreciate it.
Yeah. Sure. You bet. Why don't you continue there?
This is Scott. I found a hint that says just hit the space bar, and then to unmute. Pardon me. To unmute, hit the space bar again.
Well, let me try that. I'm going to hit the space bar, folks. Bear with me here.
That's just fine. Yeah, we got you.
Well, it didn't mute me, so.
Okay, sorry. There's another command, but it looks kind of cumbersome. Let me see. Control-Alt-Command and the up arrow.
Oh, okay. I get it.
And I don't even use Skype on the laptop. I use it on the phone. So okay. I'm kind of ignorant when it comes to shortcuts and stuff on the laptop.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay. Let me play with it. I'll just be quiet.
Also, hotkeys have to be enabled for Skype.
Okay.
It's under advanced settings. Sorry, I looked at it. It's like 7 steps. And looks like it's going to take a while to use a hotkey. Unless it's already enabled on yours, I would try Shift-D.
Hey, I know that song.
Okay, somebody's got music playing.
My phone just
Okay, yeah, yeah.
I suppose Shift D was also the command to start playing your entire music base.
Yeah, I guess so. Release all my innermost feelings there. Okay, let's see. I'm sorry, I'm really tensing out here, guys. Let me tell you.
Take a deep breath. You're doing fine. You're gonna be great, and I hope you will be a long-standing member of the conversation, Frank.
All right. Can you hear me?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Well, it isn't working, folks. But I just want to say that I really appreciate being a part of this group, and I listen to y'all very frequently, and got a good message going, Bob. And keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very kindly, Frank. I really appreciate it, and we all do. I look
Frank, if you can stand one more, I found this. Command, Shift, and letter M, like Mary.
Can you hear me now?
Yeah, sorry.
Yeah, that didn't work. So,
here's one, Frank. Try Command, Option, and down arrow.
I think what you're asking me is Control. Is that what you're asking me? Control.
It says Command. It says Command, Option, down arrow to decrease the volume.
Command is equivalent of PC control.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that sounded like a Mac keyboard instruction.
Yeah, maybe this is a Mac keyboard. Jeez.
Yeah, and nothing like confusion to help confuse everything. But here anyway, I'm really pleased that I can learn how to do even a modicum of this this techno stuff. And that isn't what you're here to talk about. I mean, you guys, we've got a lot of issues in this country right now with gun violence and with racial disparity, and you know, and so I feel like it's a good time to talk about some of these issues.
Well, I think you're right. The question is, and it always attends the situation. You know, how do you talk about this kind of thing? Without simply, you know, wallowing in gore. I mean, I don't have cable TV here, so I haven't been glued to CNN or any of the other alphabet soup. But I've been reading enough and seeing enough rerun video online that seems to be what it is, what it mostly has been. That's how the for-profit media are. And if we could point ourselves in the direction of something more than body counts and grief, then you know, then maybe that's a way forward. If that makes any sense at all.
You know, Bob, none of this makes any sense. I was on a live chat last night, basically when this was happening in real time. Sergi was kind of keeping us posted and said there was at least one sniper on a building in downtown Dallas, and I was thinking, what the fuck? And
oh yeah, at one point in time, no, there were multiple snipers. I mean, they were triangulating.
Right.
Which
right.
just kind of goes to show, and it was late this afternoon, or at least mid-afternoon, before I even saw an alert from the New York Times saying, oh, by the way, there was a lone gunman. Yeah. At which point I looked up and said, oh, great, a lone gunman snipering from a height in a building in Dallas.
Yeah, and it wasn't the book depository. I mean, what I initially was thinking, I heard gunman on top of the roof, policeman dead, and the only people that were either dead or injured were policemen. I was thinking, oh, please, let this not be a black person. And now that I've heard that it was a black person, this Micah guy, Micah Harvey Oswald or whatever, you know, what the image that comes to mind is in the Tarantino movie Django Unchained, where, you know, finally, you know, all this pent-up anger and frustration boils over and you know, he just unloads it on whoever is available, who he sees as the oppressor, and that's sort of the you know, that's sort of what went through my mind. Now, I don't know, maybe I'm being racist in saying that. Maybe I hopefully I'm not. That's not my intent. If for the folks who are listening, but you know, and the thing is, it's like, oh my God damn it. You know, it's like, it's only going to make things worse. It's only going to aggravate the situation because they have the guns. We may have the numbers, but they have the guns, and you know, it's just going to lead to possible crackdowns on, you know, against minorities. And, you know, it's already bad enough. So it's sort of like throwing, you know, gasoline onto the open flames already, you know? So unfortunately, Bob, I'm usually an optimistic guy, but I'm not too optimistic about this whole situation at this moment, you know?
No. I just got a quick compendium, courtesy of Mark down in Florida, and remember, Mark's got a history as both a member of the Marine Corps and a member of law enforcement. We've got the Tennessee story that I just mentioned in the conversation with Angry. In Georgia, an officer was lured deep into an apartment complex and then shot and wounded. Apparently, a driver was pulled over in Missouri and then shot another police officer in the neck. And the question is that just everyday? Is that the kind of stuff that happens every day, and the media are simply focusing on it now, or is this the outbreak of something awful?
I'm afraid it's the latter, Bob. I'm sure this stuff happens to some extent on an everyday basis, but I mean, earlier in the week when the two, you know, African American gentlemen were killed mercilessly by the cops, it's like one day and then one after the other, it's like, geez, you know, this is not a good thing, you know.
Well, and that's why I said pretty much at the top of the program, this does not change the fact that we have a police problem in the United States. We don't really know. I don't think we really even know what we want of the police in the United States, and that ain't their fault. It's the fault of the people who make the damn laws. You know, did we really intend for? Because I'm sure you're well aware, Rick. With the advent of the automobile. The law became a mess because all the little, 46 separate states, the 46 separate little countries with their legislatures ran out and started making laws about the newfangled motor car. And you wound up with laws like requiring a motorist to pull over to the side of the road if approached by a horse and wagon. And extinguish any lights so as not to spook the horse. Okay.
They couldn't wait to change the narrative.
So the issue becomes one of just to finish up where I was going. So then you get, you know, the laws regarding so-called traffic safety. And then, lo and behold, traffic safety laws become reasons for the police to pull you over. And then the police figure out that once they pull you over, they can do other stuff. And if you ever want to get into a Byzantine and arcane area of law, try to figure out the 50 different sets of rules for what a police officer can do once he's pulled you over and what obligations you have as a motorist. Not a citizen, a motorist. And what the police officer can do for quote-unquote officer safety.
Mm.
And what kind of searches they can do. You know, they can search some for officer safety, you know, just to make sure that, you know, that the officers are going to be safe pulling you over for that busted taillight. But then, you know, if they find a bag of weed, well, you're on the ground, some bitch.
One thing leads to another. It's the proverbial slippery slope.
And then, you know, municipalities who were having to pay the police officers in counties and states and whatnot figured out that they, if they started attaching a lot of fines to it, that they could actually make money that way. And yeah. then the court system went, hey, why don't we make them come through the court system and we'll attach court costs too? And everybody makes money.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so you see a system evolve driven not by a desire for public safety, but by, come on, everybody, one, two, money. Three, capitalism.
Money.
Money.
And then when you and then take it another step, and you've got a far more fragile, far more powerless community in the communities of color, and shit, they just turn into a damn bank. Whatever they've got, the cops can come and take.
And it's sort of the reverse of the payday lending that they have, and they're, you know, that poor people have in communities where they live. It's basically where the cop, they're basically the ATM for the cops and the, you know, the municipalities. Like Ferguson, Missouri is the prototypical example. I mean, you know. Yeah,
Ferguson, Missouri was just a, it was just a well that was dug right down into the heart of the black community. And, you know, they did all the paying and got none of the services.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Hey, Bob, this is Trey. A quick question for you real quick.
Yeah, hey, Trey.
Yesterday, last night, you were saying something about, I guess along the way, there was a rule or Congress did something where local police couldn't or cities couldn't collect taxes or whatever it was. Can you just kind of go over it again? Because I thought it was super interesting.
I don't think I said they couldn't collect taxes. What I was talking about was the fact that with the advent of the Reaganism, you know, Americans have always sort of railed against taxes. Nobody likes taxes, but they provide, they provide the ability for government to, in turn, provide a civil society. But in the Reagan 80s, and with the rise of, you know, sick freaks like Grover Norquist, taxation becomes a dirty word. If you want to run for office as a Republican anymore, you have to sign Grover Norquist's pledge that says that you will never, ever, so help you God Almighty on your mother's grave, vote for any tax.
Doesn't that pledge contain references to drowning government and to shrink government to a size where it can be drowned in a bathtub, Bob?
That's our boy.
Yep. And I remember after Mitt Romney lost, he called Mitt Romney a poo-poo head. That was on tape.
And so what you get is a situation in which governments are afraid to impose taxes for the necessary services they have to provide. So instead they go to, and people who live in Florida know this. Oh, they know it really well. They go to fees. And in terms of law enforcement, you get speed traps. And courts can do very little about them, as long as they're pulling over everybody.
Yeah, that's what you're not they couldn't do taxes. It was just that they had to.
They don't. No, they don't dare because some Republican will run against them. Some damn teabagger saying, "Well, he raised your taxes because he's a tax and spend liberal, and he don't love Jesus."
Well, you know this.
So
This whole aversion to taxes also, Bob, explains why, you know, California, you know, still has free public free tuition in the Constitution for, you know, public schools. But the way they get around it is they call it fees. That's how they can charge people now for, you know, for tuition at state universities. They don't call it, you know, it's not tuition, but they call it fees. But it's the same thing. You know?
Hey, Bob?
Yeah.
How about this? Just to kind of, you'll pardon the expression, take a shot at addressing the question that you posed a little while ago. Does this sort of thing with this spate of police shootings today, Is it the natural order of things, or is it like the Steve Allen composition, this could be the start of something big? Is this the start of something big? I think what it is it's something between the natural state of things and the start of something big. To me, it's the natural result of decades of absolutely steadfastly not doing anything to rein in some of these the situation with gun ownership, who can own them, what kind of guns they can own, and that kind of thing. And it keeps going back to what I say. We'll continue to see this stuff as regular as clockwork if we don't behave in a manner that's consistent.
Oh yeah, keeping sure. Yeah, guns sure. Thoughts and prayers.
Out of the hands of lunatics, terrorists, and criminals. And they steadfastly refuse to do even small things that 80 or 90% of the populace...
Yeah, but hold on, Scott, hold on. The shooter in Dallas was none of those three. You don't have to be insane to kill somebody. If you had to be insane to kill somebody, we wouldn't have anybody in prisons who'd killed anybody. Because, you know, supposedly the law doesn't imprison insane people. The guy who did the shooting in Dallas had a perfectly spotless record and a respectable military record.
That wasn't terror that we saw unfolding on our TVs in the wee hours today.
No. He wasn't committing terrorism. He wasn't trying to compel a change in governmental policy by the imposition of a random act of violence. He specifically targeted police officers in what appears to be an absolute case of vengeance. Vengeance is mine, saith the Lord, and all of that stuff. But it was vengeance.
Well, hopefully the robot delivered bomb that apparently did him in, hopefully only did mass trauma to his torso and not his head, because I think we're going to find, if his head is intact, it's going to be like Charles Whitman, and I think that is the preferable comparison in history with gun violence, Charles Whitman as opposed to Lee Harvey Oswald, for reasons that I stated in an email I sent a little while ago. Whitman, 50 years ago, come August 1st, climbed up a tower in Austin, Texas, at the University of Texas, and took pot shots at all comers down on the ground, 27 stories below, I think it was.
I'm not sure that they would be able to tell that in this case. I haven't seen the exact description, what the size of the explosion was. But just the fact that it killed him when they're up against it, it was probably in what they call the Brissant zone, B-R-I-S-S-A-N-T. Basically, nerve tissue would be jello.
Well, my point is that if his head is intact and they can do an autopsy, they're either going to find that there's some sort of growth in his head, or through his writings online and interviews with people that he interacted with online and otherwise, it's either a mass in his head, in his brain, or voices in his head. It'll come.
See, I couldn't disagree more.
Sure, you could. Come on, try.
What I was
getting at is the brain tissue isn't much denser than cottage cheese in vitamin E, and right next to an explosion, it kind of gets jostled to the point where it might not be studyable.
Well, that's too bad.
Well, but even so, why are we looking for a medical out for this guy?
Yeah, and back to the societal thing. Let's fall back to Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Baseline, that your foundation physiological needs: are you being fed? Do you have water? Is it hot? Temperature wise. Next is safety. Do you feel like you're under attack? Above that is, do you feel belonging? And above that is esteem. and above that is self-esteem, or excuse me, self-actualization. That's where you can think and make an analysis of your situation. We are barely above the physiological stage. Both the cops feel that they're out of, not in a safe position, and the populace feels that they're not in a safe condition. And we have different portions of the populace that feel like they're not safe for different reasons that are opposing each other. So we're not at the point of self-actualization. We're several basements below it, where we can be thinking and analyzing properly. These people are being, a large number of them are being pushed by society to the point where they have no self-esteem. They do not feel belonging when they're being singled out and attacked like this. So we've got almost such a large portion of both of these factions not even making it through the safety phase of the Maslow's hierarchy.
May I paraphrase, Snork?
Sorry.
No. What you're saying is that people who are treated as subhumans are responding, in this case, responded in a subhuman fashion.
Right, because it's no more than the way your knee jerks when you hit it.
No, I agree, and that's
so
that's the horror of the point.
And it could take 80 years to resolve this because it means that in order to work at the esteem stage, we have to start at somebody when they're little.
It's taken 150 so far.
You know, because, we just went backwards.
because the white power structure in this country thinks that if it says to Black America, you're free. Why don't you say thank you for making me free to every white person you meet? That's what you ought to be doing, damn it.
Realistically, the whole country is stuck, or at least 47% of us are stuck in the physiological stage because we do not have stable jobs. Those of us who are working gigs instead of full-time jobs. And the best thing we need to do is we need to make some laws that Americans have to be working. And I really believe the first step is to make there be a job of last resort, like Roosevelt did, where if you can't find anything else, go help us build a park. Go help us do something for the future. And another thing is our Pentagon is the one thing, one place everybody wants to buy stuff. If we have the one rule that if it's bought by the Pentagon, it has to be sourced American first, the jobs will fly back here very quickly.
Well, Snork, let me, you know, Maslow and self-actualization notwithstanding, let me take another swing at it to refine what you're saying, at least what I'm hearing. We're having trouble getting a fix on the current state of things, defining it and getting a handle on what it actually is, because you've got 316 million people, each with his own pre-installed filter that they run reality through and thereby come up with their own version of what reality is. And these people vote. And the people who can make the change know that these people vote. So they are resistant, never mind that they may be predisposed not to do anything of a meaningful change nature, but they know that if they even think or speak about doing something that everybody wants, at least 80 or 90%, that those people who vote, who have their reality going on for them, are going to vote them out of office. They're going to get primaried. So it's a built-in thing that nothing is going to change.
Hey, let me call on Steve from Georgia, Stan. He wants to add to this.
Hey, Bob, I got to quit watching Fox News. It's giving.
Oh, Jesus! You.
I can't do it anymore.
I thought that was taken as read.
I was watching Fox News and listening to Washington Journal, the Rubes on Washington Journal today on split screen, and it's a wonder I've got my sanity. Fox News was doing their best to spin this thing as an Islamic terrorist attack. They were doing their best early this morning. I don't know if anybody was able to see it or not, but the implication was strongly there. And they also succeeded in changing the narrative about police abuse and what we're all talking about now. And that's the media.
Well, okay. Now stop just a minute. You know I don't have any tequila in here right now. So what were they saying? Isn't Xavier one of those Muslim-y names?
Well, they were saying that it would be the MO of the Islamic terrorist to take an event such as this, where there were rallies everywhere, and just start taking out innocent people. The implication was there. They didn't come right out and say it, but I'm not the only one that picked up on it, because a few sane people that called into Washington Journal also commented on this.
Oh, so, and then, of course, there's a photograph now circulating of him, dear God, wearing a dashiki.
Yes. So, and they've done changed the narrative, which is the saddest part to me. You know, instead of us talking about minorities being abused by law enforcement, what are we talking about? The whole spiel in Texas. Am I correct in that or not?
Well, I think you are, and I think we're doing a pretty good job of not letting it not know, right. Because
Well, we're above that, you know, and I don't mean to put us all on a pedestal. It's just that's the point I wanted to make, and I'm going to toss it back to you. I'm really tired, and I'm just not that articulate tonight, but I appreciate you guys. I really do.
Oh, thank you, Steve. Thank you so much, and thanks for matching your fraternity brother, Steve.
Oh, no worries. The fraternity, no worries, Steve. Bob. I hope you have a great evening, okay?
We're gonna try under the circumstances.
I might jump in later on, and I'll be listening. You guys take care.
All right. Be good, Steve. Say hi to Karen and Cletus. I noticed...
I met a doctor.
Wait.
I had a recommendation for Steve. Go the next 30 days without watching C-SPAN or Fox, and you'll be 2 inches taller, you'll lose 40 pounds, and you'll be a better dancer.
Very good.
And you won't have any headaches.
I just noticed that Jenny in Wisconsin has joined in. Hey, Jenny.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. I really don't have anything to say much, but thought it just in case I'd join in.
Okay. Well, you know, we're here if the mood strikes you.
I either have like nothing to say or too much to say, so I'll just say nothing at the moment.
Yeah,
Bob, I think this whole thing is being egged on by the right wing radio and right wing TV. If we could shut Fox News down and shut stations down like 99.7 in Nashville, things would be a whole lot better. I mean, it's, you know, you listen to what comes on Fox News, and you know the right wing part of our government can do just about anything they want to. And they're going to stand behind it. And then you've got all the people out here in TV land that start clapping like a bunch of porpoises clapping at SeaWorld for chum. And I just, you know, it's sad. People just can't think for themselves anymore.
Well, I think you're very, Charlie, you're pointing toward one of the essential questions that we have to deal with and steadfastly refuse to. And that is the way that we define freedom of speech in this country.
Well, there's such thing as freedom of speech, and there's a such thing as slander. And the people who claim to be religious have just taken to slander. And
well, libel and slander are civil offenses, okay? The problem is that we have a right wing in this country that is actively engaged in what generally can be taken as a criminal undertaking, to wit, incitement to riot. Okay.
Sure.
Now
sure.
Nobody incited the march in Dallas, and the march in Dallas was not a riot. Okay, it was a peaceful protest that is absolutely covered under the First Amendment to the Constitution of the United States.
How many people out here in wonderful redneck TV land know even what the Constitution says?
Oh, no. Their Constitution exists only in their head, and it includes under God and personal relationship with the Lord Jesus Christ.
That's right.
But on the other hand, when you've got people like Texas Lieutenant Governor Greg Abbott, Dan Patrick, going on Fox, as he did today, and saying things like, all these officers last night lost their lives protecting people who were protesting against them. This has to end. Too many in the general public who aren't criminals but have a big mouth are creating situations like we saw last night. We have to have the police's back. And I'm sick and tired of those who are protesting our police and putting their lives in danger. And then said, all those protesters last night, and I mean, get the hockey puck. All those protesters last night, they turned around and ran the other way, expecting the men and women in blue to protect them. What hypocrites. What an asshole.
Yeah, he is. And you know,
what he's doing, Charlie, in that moment is he is inciting his white followers into a white, and I do mean white, hot rage.
Well, the one thing that gets me about the guy that was killed up in Minnesota by the police officer, it seems to me like I remember some audio about the police officer, his fellow police officer saying, that's okay. We'll get through this. No, it's not okay. When you take somebody's life, you need to make amends and you know, you need to put things right with their family. You can't bring them back. But this idea about running to your police union and running to the insurance companies and stuff like that.
And getting a paid vacation. Don't forget the paid vacation, Charlie.
Yeah, that is the problem right there. That is the problem. And the problem also is Tony Elite,
Scalia?
The Alito guy
on
the Supreme Court saying, in good faith. No, there's no in good faith. You know,
Charlie, that's not just him.
What they do.
That's a generation's worth of Supreme Court precedent. There's just about anything the police does, just about any abusive conduct, just about any outrageous conduct has a history of being excused by the Supreme Court under the rubric of good faith. And just to add into that equation, you know the guy that Barack Obama nominated to sit on the Supreme Court? What's his name? Merrick?
Garland?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Merrick Garland?
Yeah.
Garland Merrick. Which is it, Rick?
Garland. No, it's Merrick Garland.
Okay.
Merrick's his first name.
Yeah, because they're both kind of last names. Well, it should be remembered that that guy has almost never, ever voted on the side of a criminal defendant. So for those of us who say, you know, we're going to vote for Hillary Clinton, and then say, because the Supreme Court, well, that guy is not going to step away from excusing bad behavior by the police on the grounds good faith.
I'm sorry.
Is that a robot? What was that?
It's Charlie's connection.
Charlie's on a mobile phone, so it might be a connection.
You know, I guess, you know, whenever I look at the Constitution, it says that you'll be judged by a jury of your peers and not by the instructions of a judge. So.
Wait, Charlie. Oh, please. A jury cannot judge a case without being instructed upon what the law is that they are supposed to use to apply the facts they've heard to and reach their judgment.
That's right.
I mean, that's at least theory. Although any lawyer who's ever tried cases before a jury will tell you that one of their fondest fantasies would be to actually see how a jury reaches a decision, because lawyers have a sneaking suspicion that they decide cases on everything but the facts. Right,
well,
Rick?
I firmly believe in jury nullification. I mean, you got to listen to the judge's instructions, but nothing tells me I've got to follow them. I'm a juror. I can do whatever I want to.
Well, you know, if nothing else, you know, if no other case proved jury nullification, it was the Simpson case, because those jurors deliberated all of, like, what, 2 hours after a how many month trial? They just wanted to get the hell home. They were tired of being sequestered, you know? I mean, they could have voted the first day and it still would have been the same verdict, I bet, you know? So, yeah, I mean, jury nullification definitely does exist. And I've actually sat on a jury before and I sort of saw the group dynamics. It's very fascinating how it all works, and how decisions are arrived at, and the influence of peer pressure. And, you know, I was the foreperson, so I ended up wanting to convict this guy, but there were only like 5 votes for conviction.
What malpracticing lawyer let you on the jury?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly.
Oh my goodness.
And get this. It was a case involving solicitation of prostitution. And when I was in the box answering, you know, questions, I made kind of a stray comment. You know, I don't really think that, you know, victimless crimes, you know, like, you know, sex between consenting adults and drugs and so forth should really be prosecuted. The prosecutor kept me on in that one.
Oh my goodness, are you serious?
Now, it's possible they'd already run out of peremptory challenges, and so they were stuck with me. I mean, I don't really know. Yeah, I was actually on that jury, and I eventually decided after, like, we were kind of not quite a deadlock, but, you know, it was like 8-4 in favor of acquittal. I like switched my vote to acquittal. It's like, I don't have time for this, you know, like into the second day of deliberations. And so I pulled one or two people along with me, and there were a couple holdouts, and they were kind of pissed off at me that I'd switched my vote. And eventually there was only one holdout, and finally I think she gave in. But, you know, there's a whole lot of peer pressure involved in a jury deliberation, and who the jurors like trust and look up to and so forth. And, you know, I was the only attorney on the panel. I was with the U.S. Attorney's Office then, and so they decided to select me as the foreperson. So it's a real trip, the group dynamics involved in and the psychology of juries, you know. I'm sure there's entire courses that are taught on that subject. So there you go.
Hey, Charlie?
Yeah.
You raised a good point early in the conversation about the goings-on at Fox and the jury that they're attempting to influence is the jury of public opinion, and they have they take a page out of the book of Frank Luntz, the linguist and political consultant, who has basically in the last 20 years or so redefined the language to make words mean whatever the hell he wants them to mean to support this right-wing mindset or framework, and that shouldn't be overlooked. The fact that a lot of people are what little information they have, they're getting from outlets like Fox News and a lot of these right-wing TV and radio programs. And very little, if any of it, is based in any established reality. It's all wordplay and word games aimed at the least discerning person out there in TV or radio land. And that's troubling. That's you're right. It is quite troubling.
And also,
it's brainwashing.
Yeah, it certainly is. And that basically was
Fox News destroy my parents' brains.
Jeez. Well, you know, besides the brainwashing, you saw the Fox News model of government on display during the Bush administration. In terms of they basically said whatever the hell they wanted, they told whatever lie they needed to enough times so people believed it, And you saw that to some extent in the Reagan administration, but not to the extent as it was in the Bush administration. And Bush, even in one of his more honest moments, was quoted as saying, you know, sometimes you just kind of have to catapult the propaganda. So, I mean, that's how they sort of govern. They basically, you know, facts are irrelevant. All they, you know, they have a certain way they want to go. They have a certain opinion. They're going to say that that's the way it is, and they're going to keep saying it until people believe it, you know, and damned be the facts. Facts are just inconvenient to them. And, you know, and that's the Fox News model, you know, and my condolences, Sparky, to the to parents' brains getting sucked out of their heads.
Well, Fox News didn't start till 1996, right?
Yeah. No, I think it was like...
I think it was 1996.
Was it 96? Oh, maybe it was.
That's correct. Yes, it was 96.
Okay.
That was pretty much the beginning of the heyday of Rush Limbaugh, too. And then my dad started listening to Rush Limbaugh in the mornings, too.
Here's something to add to your reading list, since Roger Ailes is in the news and since we're talking about Fox, and those two are synonymous. There was a book that came out a couple of years ago called The Loudest Voice in the Room. And I forget the guy who wrote it, but it's quite a lengthy book, and it's all about Roger Ailes. And Fox News is nothing new. It's basically his ultimate wet dream. He was pushing this kind of thing back when he was working for Nixon as a right-wing news organization to go up against the so-called, the perceived liberal bias in what they called back then mainstream media. So check out that book if you can possibly do it, because it'll give you chapter and verse about how we got to be where we are now with Fox News spewing nonstop bullshit 24/7.
And Scott, to carry that a bit further, my understanding is that Ailes' idea was to call it GOP TV, and obviously it never became that because there was no funding. But then Uncle Rupert came along and, you know, decided he wanted to like invade America and get his U.S. citizenship, and so he's the guy who started along with Ailes, started the money. I mean, he provided the money for starting Fox News, basically.
Yeah, and it was a shit pot full of money. I forget the exact figure, but Fox didn't start turning a profit for something like 8 years, maybe a little longer. I mean, untold hundreds of millions of dollars were poured down that rat hole by Rupert Murdoch until it caught on. And now they're probably making money hand over fist.
Oh, yeah, I remember. Well, you know, I remember when they were so desperate to gin up viewers that they had Flush Flimball doing paid mentions for them on his program. That was back in the day when I was running up and down the highway all the time, and you know, he was the only thing on the radio. And my friends, Fox News, it's a fair and balanced.
But if you want to trace the trail back, Fox actually got its start out of WTTG Channel 5 in Washington, D.C. So if you historians that want to trace the trail back, that's where it got its start.
Well, yeah, because WTTG, and I grew up right on the outskirts of D.C., was owned by a company called Metro Media. They had the regular complement of 7 TV stations, 7 AMs and 7 FMs, back when that was all you could own. And Metro Media came up for sale, and that was what Murdoch went for as the springboard and the basis for what became the Fox Network. And I, as I recall, it's been a couple of years since I read that book, The Loudest Voice in the Room, but that's all outlined in the book, as I recall, just the entire chapter and verse Genesis story of how we got to be where we are now. And I would love nothing more than for Gretchen Carlson's lawsuit to finally rid us of Roger Ailes, or the sexual harassment lawsuit. Personally, I shudder when I think of it. It's like
If I was a betting man, I would bet against that.
Well, it's like to have Roger Ailes sidle up to you trying to whisper sweet nothings is like being hit upon by Jabba the fucking Hutt.
Didn't Liz Beal try that with Bill O with the loofah incident 10 years ago, and it went nowhere?
Can I interrupt for a minute?
The settlement.
Go, Sparky.
It damaged his reputation, whatever that is.
I saw on breaking news today that Roger Ailes is going to go to arbitration instead of a lawsuit.
Of course.
Yeah, keep it out of the news.
Well, there's probably an arbitration clause in her contract.
Yeah, keep it out of the courts is what it is.
Yeah, right. Right. Exactly. Well, you know, I was kind of hoping there'd be like a class action lawsuit for all those, you know, the fembots that they've had announcing on Fox News. And, you know, they could all join Gretchen's lawsuit against Roger, you know, because, you know, if he's done that to her, you know that he's done that to just about every, you know, female that's, you know, every female spokesmodel they've had, you know.
Let's be a little careful throwing around a word like fembot, because as the saying goes, you know, we all have a price. We're all for sale. The only question is one of price. And with that in mind, who's to say? I mean, there have been good journalists who've gone over to Fox and turned into complete assholes. And they did it because that's what they took the money to do. Okay. Mm-hmm. And they do it with a perfectly clear conscience. At the end of the day, they walk through the doors. Good night, good night, good night. And they've got a nice living, and they keep their consciences nicely sequestered from what they do. If Fox has a taste for hiring, if Rupert and Roger have a taste for hiring beautiful women, guess why they do that. Because people watch the beautiful women. You know, okay, Roger Ailes likes short skirts and long legs on high heels. Guess what? So does the male demographic that watches Fox News.
Guilty as charged, Bob.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, you know, let me ask you all a question. Would you rather, at least the guys, I guess I have to be careful here. Would you all rather watch Candy Crowley on CNN or, let's say, Gretchen Carlson or...
Oh, you dig this hole. I ain't touching this show.
Candy Crowley on Fox. Unfortunately, Karen's not listening. So
yeah, I know.
Safe.
I knew I was going to get in trouble there.
Yeah, keep on digging there.
It's getting hard to breathe, Jules. I got to be careful here. I don't want the dirt to get in my snout here too much.
Jules wanted to bring something to the conversation, I think.
Oh, yeah. Let me move back over to that side of my board. Just a few quick notes. You were talking about numbers earlier, and just to put things into perspective, as far as numbers go, and you were talking about the deaths, the police officers and the deaths of the police officers, we're right now at we're on July 8th, and right now, as far as deaths go, we're about at 2015 walls for associated deaths.
The numbers as compiled by The Guardian were at 561 yesterday.
I'm going by, you were talking about the police officers' deaths. If you take into account the number from the incidents yesterday, going up to, okay, this is...
Oh, you're talking about the number of police officers killed. You're not talking about the number of people police officers have killed.
We are equivalent to where we were in 2015. We're right about at, we're actually 3% under where we were in 2015. Believe it or not. So, I mean, those numbers are pretty equivalent. And there is a site that is kept here in the United States called Killed by Police. It's a community kept list. And just for example, on the day that Philando Castile was murdered, there were 1, 2, 3, 4 other people killed by police. on that day. Yesterday there were two, or just today there have been two other people. So I mean, this is not anything that's, I mean, this is, these numbers just keep adding up and adding up and adding up. The day that, let's see, you know, it's these numbers, like I said, they keep adding up. The day that Alton Sterling was killed, that was on the 5th, was 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 other people were killed by police, and we didn't hear about any of them. 18-year-old, 21-year-old, 34-year-old, 49-year-old.
And it all ultimately begs the question, to quote a popular song of the 60s, how many deaths will it take till we know that too many people have died? That's the question.
Today would have been Philando Castile's 33rd birthday, too.
Oh, jeez. Well, Scott, to answer your question, I think we'll only know once the blood is about up to our shoulders, and even then, maybe not until it's just about up over our mouth. Who knows?
And yeah. According to this site, it's 608 as of July 8th, as of today.
Wow, that's just unbelievable. I mean,
yeah, which means that we're looking at somewhere over 3 people per day killed by police by December 31st.
Jeez.
I heard today on Democracy Now, and I tried to look up the stats, but I can't find them, that statistically, under Obama, there's been less policemen killed by citizens than any time in the last century.
Actually, you know what I find interesting is that there is a site for officer fatalities. They keep very good records of officer fatalities through you know, their logs and everything. We just don't keep very good tabs of citizen fatalities, and it's a citizen group that is keeping track of the killed by police as a community organization that is doing this.
And you know, I couldn't help noticing the fact that in the reporting, the for-profit media reporting that I saw in the last, you know, near, well, 18 hours, I couldn't help noticing that they just felt like they had to wave the bloody shirt. 5 officers were killed last night. That's the most in a single, that's the most in one incident since the terrorist attacks of September 11th.
Why is that
relevant? Why is that necessary to mention?
Well, that's the point I was trying to make, Bob, but you made it so much more eloquently than I did. So thank you for that.
You know, it goes back to, you know, 9/11, dim leader, 9/11, citizen.
Well, and it's only relevant. That statistic is a bullshit statistic. And the only possible relevance is a lot of police and firefighters, first responders, let's say, were killed on September 11th while they were doing what? While they were doing their fucking duty.
Yeah,
just as these
true.
5 officers in Dallas were killed while they were doing what? Doing their fucking duty in a pure way to protect and to serve. That's exactly what they were doing. And in 9/11, they all died. Everybody concerned, up to and including a friend of mine who was on Flight 77 that hit the Pentagon, were all killed. And the people who were responsible for killing them, whoever they were, didn't give a shit who got killed. The point of the exercise was to kill people and to bring terror into the fucking conversation.
Well, I think as long as these officers are going to be approaching cars, they're going to be more on edge now than ever. You know, as they're walking up to the car, they're already ready to shoot. And now that we've just made the spring even tighter.
Right,
Snork,
but they'll just get to yell, fuck, oh, fuck, oh, fuck. And some other officer will walk over and say, it's okay, you'll get through this.
I think that we should be doing something that might be objectionable. I think we actually need more police, but not just out there with another gun in front. I would like to see, it's pretty easy to put a camera on a drone now. Instead of having these guys go up and check the car, send the drone out, land it on the hood, put a camera facing into the cabin. You see two people there that don't look like they're an issue. It should wind back the spring a little bit, so they're not so on the edge when they.
Yeah, but see, Snort, now you're defeating the purpose of their existence. Especially in small towns, police have to justify their existence, not because. And you know what? I'm glad somebody mentioned it earlier. It deserves to be mentioned. What the police were doing in Dallas last night was actually their noblest and highest calling. They were protecting people in the exercise of their constitutional rights. You know who they were protecting the people from? Crazy-ass white people. And this murderous ass rained down death and destruction on them, and for that my heart breaks. But
ass, no question about it.
Just one thing. Cops in small communities are not the same as big city cops. Seldom do they have the same level of training. Or the same level of professionalism. I can't tell you how many cops we've had 2 miles down the road here in the last 10 years. And the police budget of my little town is almost half cop, okay? Because of what it costs to have one. And so they have to justify their existence by writing traffic tickets. The fact of the matter is, if we rethought our traffic laws, if we rethought the meaning of probable cause, if a police officer sees a guy bobbing and weaving down the road, I want that guy pulled over because he's drunk and he's going to kill somebody if he doesn't kill himself first.
Exactly.
But to have some roller come up behind a car that they determined. It's an older model. It's got some rust on it. Look, black people are driving it. Hey, isn't their taillight cracked? That shit has got to end because that is the front end of a great deal of the abuse that takes place within the policing system. All right?
Exactly. Like, what justifies a broken taillight? To have somebody come up with a gun to your car. What is that? That is crazy. I heard a guy talking today and I never actually thought about it. But he was like, what justifies an armed guard to come to your car for a broken traffic light? That makes absolutely zero sense.
Well, it basically, it escalates the situation and gives them a pretext to bust you and see if they can, furnish what they regard as probable cause to search your vehicle.
Well, and see, that's something that a lot of people miss out of the original live stream video that that Diamond Reynolds put out. Eventually, she says, and we weren't doing nothing. Except we had a little weed.
Yeah.
And see if you can, busted taillight is not much of a fine. Oh, but if you've got busted taillight and a quarter ounce of weed, hot damn, the court costs are going to go up, the fine's going to go up, and that means that, and that means that the city budget's going to be better by $200.
Going to cost you about 10 grand to get out of it.
Yeah, and then it's going to help the Correction Corporation of America that's running the for-profit prison as well, and their share price goes up.
A note just came in from Ray in Florida. No one's even suggesting a solution, and the government has no interest in one. Does it really surprise anyone we're speeding up the pace as we walk into hell? Doesn't surprise me a bit. What's coming will make the French Revolution look like a tug of war. We've been on this course since the 80s. Well, Ray, I'm not going to push back very hard on that, but the fact of the matter is we have been on this course since 1492. And it's just about damned well time we start trying to figure it out, because we really haven't expended much skull sweat on it thus far. Now, great amounts of skull sweat were expended in trying to figure out a way how to keep people of color from ever becoming fully actualized human beings. The entire Jim Crow system was predicated on that. Okay? Yeah, I was thinking back to what John Brown said. I had hoped that we might accomplish the abolition of slavery without overmuch bloodshed. It appears I was wrong, which is a paraphrase, but he said something like that. And John Brown was hailed as a hero by some, but was Frederick Douglass said, "I could live for my people; he could die for them."
I think we would all have a hard time wrapping our heads around how many felony arrests come out of a burnt-out tag light.
Well, since when does a burnt-out tail light or a burnt-out tag light occasion the drawing of a weapon? By the way, I just got a note from Mark in Florida. Breaking news via CNN. A highway in Atlanta near CNN has been completely shut down by protesters.
Do you know why Atlanta is a hot spot right now? Are you aware of what's going?
I very well am. A young black man was okay. Back up. Several days ago, the Klan was passing out recruiting posters in a lovely little green space in Atlanta called Piedmont Park. I know it well.
Yes.
The next morning, a young black man was found hanging dead in a tree. The police immediately declared, before any autopsy, before any sort of coroner's examination, "Well, it looks like suicide." And a lot of people got kind of pissed off. How dare you declare that without so much as an iota of investigation? Now, in the meantime, Atlanta Mayor Kasim Reed has, in fact, referred the case to the Department of Justice and completely taken it out of the hands of any of the good old boys there in Georgia.
Thank you, Bob.
Can I just, break in for 1 second?
Oh, go, Jenny, go, sure.
So, I have a friend on Facebook. This is the most Christian woman who is my friend on Facebook. She's a fellow painter, keeper. Otherwise, I would have, dismissed her long ago. These are her last three posts on Facebook. Breaking: this video proves Black Panthers were behind Dallas police massacre. Hours before this next one, hours before cops were gunned down in Dallas, Farrakhan posted the racist message. Barack Obama is a cop-hating terrorist, and so is the BLM movement. These people gunned down innocent police officers protecting the rights of these terrorists to protest. Obama won't attend a single funeral. That is the most Christian, overtly Christian person I have as a friend.
God bless you.
I mean, seriously, really? Oh my gosh. Oh, it drives me mental. She hasn't blocked me. I haven't blocked her. I don't respond to any of that, but I just can't understand, how can these people survive?
Hey, Jenny, as your attorney, can I give you a bit of advice?
Of course.
Block that church lady, please.
Well, no, I think in light of the fact that that Micah Xavier Oswald was not a member of Black Lives Matter, I think your good, upstanding, God-fearing Christian friend is bearing false witness. And probably from a spirit of kindness and Christianity should be notified of such, insofar as I'm sure she does not want to sin against Almighty God, which she is doing all over the place.
Very true.
Yeah, and if you want proof of it, see if you can find the video from 7:30 this morning, Eastern time, when the police chief of Dallas, David Brown, I believe his name is, specifically said that among the other things that this fellow, this shooter in Dallas, said to them during the negotiation, so-called, was that he didn't like the Black Lives Matter people. He disavowed any kinship with them. I mean, this is the police chief of Dallas, who happens to be black.
Well, but, see, but they'll say that just to throw you off the scent.
Well, of course they will. Of course they will. I tend to take with not just a grain, but an entire canister of Morton iodized salt, anything that a so-called spiritual person like that spouts online or otherwise, because am I really expected to believe or agree with or relate to musings of someone who has an ongoing daily conversation with any number of invisible entities? No, I don't think so.
Right, with the sky spook, absolutely.
Bob,
hey, it's Thomas. Bob, hey, Thomas, jump right in.
I wanted to commend you. I sent you an email, but I really got to commend you on your point that you made about the for-profit policing that we have, where the police have to make a budget and bring in people, and then this whole thing is. And this is because Ronald Reagan said the worst thing about government is it's here to help you. The conservatives have made
well,
the meme out of
it. Well, the nine most dangerous words in the English language, Mommy, are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Exactly, and the government has been painted as this boogeyman when it's actually the fact that we're afraid of paying tax, and City Hall is afraid of raising tax, and if we had a government that was just administering, which is the definition of government, and people saw it as a patriotic duty to pay tax, maybe you hit the nail on the head, and I really
I thank you very much, Thomas, and I think it bears probably further examination, because, you know, after all, we like to go with the original intent of the founders now, don't we, and the framers.
Amen.
Well, there weren't any, taillight speeding tickets back then. But the fact of the matter is, we sit comfortably and complacently by while people pay traffic tickets, because it means that we're not going to pay another mill, an extra mill, on our property taxes. I live in a state that will routinely turn down bond referendums to make sure, and this is not an exaggeration. I know of a county that turned down a bond referendum that would have added nothing to their property taxes, but would have allowed the county school system to provide free breakfast and lunch for every student. Now, this is one of the poorest counties in the state of West Virginia. All right?
That is so sad.
Because taxes.
Exactly, and that right there, and I talk about this on my show, and Jules and I talked about this on her show, that the meme of the government being so damn evil is the worst harm that conservatives have done to this country, and it directly affects everybody's lives. And I can't stand people who say, well, I don't want to pay attention to politics because it doesn't affect me. Tell that when the next cop pulls you over for a taillight being out. Tell that to me, and then shut the fuck up.
And it gives them carte blanche authorization to go on a fishing expedition.
It doesn't really matter. Because I'm like a white woman, and I always get a warning. Just make sure you get it done. Last time I was pulled over, so why should I care?
But it's part of a broader and larger thing. I mean, I've mentioned it on the program a couple of times. Here in West Virginia, we are now engaged in the business of balancing the budget on the back of cigarette smokers. Okay, the governor, GERT, wanted $1.50 extra on a pack of cigarettes. I think they settled at 65 cents. And while I understand there are people who will say, well, damn right, fucking smokers, they deserve it. Well, you know what? I object. But I don't object because I'm a smoker. I object because I disagree with singling out any individual group of people as being those who must carry the tax burden. Okay.
But Bob, that's a sin tax, Bob. Come on. You know?
And we're supposed to be a secular society, and the concept of sin is religious.
Yeah, no, I know. Same thing with alcohol.
I mean, a few years ago, in order to curry favor with voters, they eliminated the food tax. Now, here's how the food tax worked in West Virginia. Everybody paid 6% sales tax on everything. Okay. You want a package of the fancy ramen with the flavor boost packet, you're going to pay 6% on top of it. Unless, of course, you were using government assistance benefits, SNAP, what have, food stamps, then no tax was applied. But so apart from the very poorest of the poor, everybody participated in that system of funding the state of West Virginia. Okay, so people who drive cars buy gasoline, and we use the gasoline tax to take care of the roads. That is fair. But funding the entirety of state government on the back of one group of people, cigarette smokers, is wrong. I mean, what if we were going to, hey, I got an idea. Maybe next legislative session, we can impose a tax on fucking Bibles. Because I'll bet we got more Bible bangers in this state than we do cigarette smokers.
How dare you bang on those Bibles, Bob?
I know. But I'm trying to reach a larger point, Thomas, and that is that this goes, that, you know, this is baked into our system.
Yes.
If you got rid of stupid probable cause offenses like taillight out, and frankly, now that modern and you know what? You know who taillight out operates against? It operates against people who don't have enough money to purchase an automobile that now has LED taillights, because them little sumbitches don't hardly never burn out.
Mm.
Okay? So
now,
so that, again, it's economic, it's economic oppression.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's always a poor tax. Look at the soda tax. It goes to the same. Oh well, we're doing something. Even the liberals behind this, we're doing some. And I'm a soda drinker, and you opened my eyes to this with the cigarette tax. Well, here is the tax. We're doing something good, but it's harming people who drink soda. But we have to go after these people because we're trying to help them.
Well, right, and see, well, you know, that's the calculus that they brooded here in West Virginia. Well, you know what we got to do? We got to have a cigarette tax that's high enough that it'll fund the government, but that's also high enough that it'll make people want to quit smoking. You goddamn liars! You filthy liars!
And you know what it is? It's very expensive to be poor.
Damn
because
right!
Once you get the crack taillight ticket, like. You know, then you can't pay it. Then there's something. Then it comes something. And then it comes something. It costs. It's way more expensive to be poor.
It's an economic cascading effect is what it is. And it's designed to do that because the poor have no voice in this country.
Right. They don't vote as well.
Because they've been convinced that politics is boring and politics doesn't matter to me. And
They're all crooks.
Exactly.
Not a dime's worth the difference between them.
Exactly.
Well, Bob, when you were talking, I think it was last night, about the speed trap community not far from where you are.
Yeah.
I wasn't able to call in, but here's a quick homework assignment. Google a place called Max, M-A-C-K-S, Creek, Missouri, later on. That was the ultimate speed trap destination. Mm-hmm. Anywhere that you had to go in Missouri for a time, you had to go through Max Creek. And Google it and read the account in Wikipedia. because it will knock your socks off. These people had it down to a fine art. And finally, it was either the state or the federal people who got so outraged by the complaints that they finally shut them down. Max, M-A-C-K-S, Creek, Missouri. Check it out. It's funny as hell, except they caught me one time years ago.
Rick, there's also a town called Salina, Kansas, that is equally well known by truckers. And in the TNA that they have there, they sell T-shirts that say, "I got pulled over in Salina," and all, or Salina, however the hell you're supposed to say it, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
There you go.
And the larger argument is, it's not police work; it's a fucking scam.
Yeah,
it's Salina.
Okay.
Only reason I know is I worked with a guy that they manufactured blow up gyms there.
We have a Salina in Ohio too, or next door in Ohio.
And you know, the only thing that keeps those towns even on the map is the speed traps. I mean, you're going 1 mile an hour over, you know, the speed limit, and they'll bust you. I mean, I noticed the same thing in certain cities in Iowa, you know, like small towns that have been hollowed out by the, you know, starting out in the Reagan administration, you know, by the, you know, the bad trade deals and so forth. And, you know, that's all they have. So that's how they raise their money. And, you know, I mean,
don't they have red light cameras in L.A.?
They don't anymore. They did for a while. They've been declared to by a court, by a superior court, to be illegal here in L.A.
Because they had them up in Redding for.
Well, you know, if they did have red light cameras, I would be in a lot of trouble.
I was also going to say, there's a guy in Silicon Valley that wants to make an app where cops can ticket you and not even leave their car, pull you over, and cannot contact you, you know, from a smartphone to smartphone or another way. They're talking about it. They haven't worked the bugs out of it, but they can just sit in their car and tell you what he pulled you over for, and he could sit there if you're broken your tail lights up, say hit the brake light, take a picture.
Jeez.
Of your taillights and stuff like that, or
well, get this far.
Document the traffic stop.
Okay, well, you know, I guess that makes it safer for the police, but then your right to be confronted by the witnesses against you is lost. That's the problem with the red light cameras, you know. That was the reason why they were declared to be illegal. Now, one thing that I noticed when I went back to Iowa last winter is that just outside the city limits, I didn't know this until my mom told me, because my brother had gotten some speeding tickets, just outside the city limits, there are these like speed sensors. And if you're speeding, it'll take a picture of your plate and give you a freaking ticket without even, and you won't even find out until like maybe a couple of weeks after that you got a ticket. And I, you know, believe me, I was speeding, so I was lucky I didn't get one. Or maybe my rental car did, I don't know.
why hasn't, and this is a question for everybody, why hasn't any politician smarter than all of us picked up on the correlation with this, and specifically a Democrat, run on this? I mean, I know raising taxes is a dirty word, but isn't getting shot by a cop even dirtier?
Well, I'll tell you what. I live in the second most segregated city in the United States, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Every car that I, well, except I was pulled over because I didn't have a headlight, but it was the middle of winter, and I couldn't get my window roll down because my car is old, and he's like, "Oh, just get it fixed." I'm like, "My boyfriend's coming up this weekend," you know, whatever. I'm a white girl, gave him a load of sugar. You know, it's pathetic. Like, driving while black, driving while black, driving while black, driving while black. This is what happened in this northern, like, just right out of Milwaukee, East, Shorewood. It's a little town just north of Milwaukee, still in the Metroplex. my mom had a boyfriend who was a district attorney. Like, mm-hmm. come on. He lived in Sherwood. He would get pulled over all the time. And it wasn't for anything. Maybe one, and he was Hispanic. 1 mile over the speed limit, he would get pulled over. This is what happens here in our town. And I know I've like posted on like the horn before about this, and it is like my fucking thorn in the side Thursday. Look up Clark. It is our sheriff, Milwaukee County Sheriff, Sheriff Clark, the people's sheriff.
Oh, yeah, we know him.
Christ. He is like the worst person on the face of the planet. He runs as a Democrat, but listen to what he says. People vote for him. Like, can we get him? Can I start a petition to like get him removed? I was worried about putting a Bernie sticker on my car because he hates liberals. We should all be dead. You know, like that is my sheriff. And I live in the most segregated, second most segregated city besides Detroit.
Your sheriff is a Fox News analyst. In fact,
he is the worst person on the face of this planet. I just hate him.
How does it compare to Sheriff Joe Arpaio, Jenny? Does he make Joe look good?
He is comparable, only worse.
Yeah.
I think he's worse than Arpaio because he is a black man in Milwaukee that rides around on a horse with a cowboy hat. And he, like, go on SoundCloud, listen to the people's sheriff, and listen to what he has to say. Mm. And he is the sheriff of my county.
Jeez.
It is disgusting.
We cover him. And I'm sorry, Rick, go ahead.
Real quick, Tom, sorry about that. I was going to say that the last two sheriffs we've had in L.A. County have ended up being prosecuted for corruption charges.
I would love to, like, dig into him and, like, just get him out. Yeah. Because, like, I mean, did you ever hear the Sikh temple shooting here in Milwaukee?
Oh, yeah.
So I have friends on Facebook. One was an ex. One was a white supremacist. He started, like, he had, like, a band. He was, like, this white supremacist. Then he had a daughter. And then the other friend is the son of the head of the Sikh temple that got shot. They hooked up. The guy, the white supremacist, like, what the fuck am I doing? He had a daughter. And they hooked up right after the shooting. And they started, like, Serve to Unite in Milwaukee. So we've got so many positive things going on in Milwaukee. They go to schools. They try to talk to people. They do wonderful things. They say beautiful things. And it's like two separate people. But then we have fucking Sheriff Clark. Mm. God. It drives me mental.
Jenny, amen. Everything you said is true about him, and I just wanted to back you up on that because Right Wing Watch regularly documents him on a regular basis, and he is a scary son of a bitch. He makes Joe Arpaio look tame by comparison in a lot of ways.
Joe Arpaio with cheese curds.
Yes. Indeed, Bob.
Don't denigrate cheese curds.
See, I done went and did it.
But I'm sending you those glasses soon. Sending you the new Glarus glasses soon.
I just want to announce I got a Bernie bird inside the man cave in the rafters.
Nice.
I hope I can get him out of here.
Hey, Steve. Hey, Steve. I just saw your note. Is that confirmed?
Yeah, Bob. Randy was discussing it today. She didn't sound overly you know, like was overly anything traumatic or anything. But, you know, my take is any kind of heart issue is serious.
Well, yeah. So, you know what low esteem I hold thoughts and prayers in, but yeah. our absolute best hopes go out to our sister progressive broadcaster, Nicole Sandler, because apparently she did in fact have a heart attack last night. So
yeah, it was a minor.
Nicole, get well soon.
Actually, her angiogram came back negative, showing no damage to her heart. She did show on X-ray. She showed a small object on her lung, and she's going to the pulmonologist on Wednesday of next week.
That's good to hear. Thanks for the update. I was just going by what I heard Randy say today.
She regularly has been tweeting out her condition, including, by the way, the fact that the ambulance company, or the insurance company, her insurer, would not pay for her ambulance ride initially, and she had to fight on the phone in her hospital bed with the goddamn insurance company. Thanks, Obamacare.
What I heard was she was having very severe hot flashes and then jaw pain, then her left arm went numb, and to me that was, oh, you know, all the red flags started going up.
Yes, exactly. But her angiogram did come back, showing no damage.
Thanks
so.
For clearing that up. That's good news, and so glad to hear that.
Indeed. So another.
Where do we go from that?
Another question came along from Jay Cruzen earlier. I talked about it at the beginning of my remarks. We really didn't touch on it much in the group. But he says, "Is anyone else disturbed by the way they took down the shooter in Dallas? A robot carrying a bomb, blowing him off the face of the earth. What is that? How sadistic is that? Where do we live that's an acceptable way to end a standoff? Not that I cared for the shooter's well-being, but, you know, fuck, we're already letting the police use IEDs as negotiation tools."
Well, Bob...
Yeah, but see, now here's the... Here, this is the... again, it's interesting the Orwellian fashion in which it was described. They attached an explosive device to their bomb robot, which dude... then detonated. They didn't detonate it. He did. He brought it on himself. Let it be upon his head.
Well, the treatment of this guy is so reminiscent of that cop killer Christopher Dorner several years ago, maybe 4 years ago in L.A., if you remember that. And they tracked him down to a mountain home in like the San Bernardino Mountains near Lake Arrowhead. And they ended up setting the house on fire. I don't know if any of you remember that, but
yeah, I do.
He was also a cop killer, and he had a grievance and what have you, and wrote this long manifesto. I mean, maybe they did this to silence the guy's voice so that there was no way that he could explain why he did what he did. I mean,
well,
who knows?
It's a simple case of Jack Ruby is dead. You know, so
yeah.
You got to shut up the lone nut, you know.
Right.
Well, also what's being lost in the other suspects that they have are, I saw this, I know Fox News consider this ours, but I saw that they were being uncooperative. So Lord only knows what all that means.
Let me ask you this, Tom, who are the other suspects?
They were saying they caught a lot of, like, 3 to 4 people yesterday. And I because I watched this all night because I'm a night owl and I have no light. But I was flipping through and they said that there were other suspects that were being uncooperative. Now, one of them could have been that gentleman who they falsely identified initially and then was let go.
Who was open carrying a AR-15 with camo?
I add something I want to add. He was shown on video turning his gun into a cop, and the cop gave him his card. business card, and then he was taken to the station and interrogated.
Well, the only suspects that I'm aware of, there was a woman that they arrested at the garage where the guy was at the college.
Correct.
And then there was a black Mercedes vehicle that they pulled over on Highway 35, I think it was.
Correct.
That they had, someone had reported people tossing something in a camouflage tote bag into this car, speeding off into the darkness, and about 400 cop cars pulled two guys over. So it was the woman and these two other guys. And you're right, I haven't heard what became of them and whether they're the so-called uncooperative suspects.
Note coming in from Michael in Madison, when Jenny mentioned Sheriff Clark in Milwaukee, Michael writes, "Sheriff Clark in Milwaukee's a piece of shit and a Fox News whore, but Chief Mike Koval in Madison is just as much of a maniac. At the last city council meeting, he publicly threatened the council, telling them to watch their backs, that he was watching them. He's out of fucking control." Yeah, I read about that. My good friend Rebecca Kemble wrote that up, and it was pretty damn chilling. And of course, remember, as mentioned last night, the police chief, the recently retired police chief of St. Anthony, Minnesota, upon retiring in May, said, "We are the best trained, best police officers that have ever been. What more can we do?" And then this happens.
Well, as I commented by email last night, dredging up memories from my Catholic upbringing, St. Anthony is the patron saint that you call upon if something is lost. But in today's world, I don't think St. Anthony could help America find its lost mind, which automatically defaults the task to St. Jude, who is the patron saint of hopeless causes. So there you go.
Yeah, and just by way of wrapping it all up, because we kind of have to, is Mike back on tonight?
I think it's a rerun.
Oh, okay.
Maybe. I don't know. I thought he said it was you and then a rerun on Friday.
Oh, okay.
And then back Monday, I think.
It's a vintage show.
Okay, well, okay, so just by way of wrapping up, let's be clear about something. The United States of America will only solve its police problem when the United States of America wants to solve its police problem. And I'll be honest, I don't see any signs that we want to. So, you know, there's that. That having been said, I want to thank the entire group for a scintillating conversation this evening. Thank you, Sparky, for your continued moderation. Thank you, Billable Rick and Trey, Steve from Georgistan. Thanks, Jules. Thanks, Thomas. Thanks, Jenny, for joining in. Thank you, Scott. Thank you, Frank. I look forward to seeing you back in the room again, Frank. And I'm sure you'll get the hang of the whole keyboard command Skype thing sooner rather than later. And thank you also, Snork, for jumping in. This is quite possibly it's the best way we could possibly end the week. And I think Friday on the front porch is just a beautiful idea, and you guys are the ones who make it so. Thank you, one and all, to everyone who contributed to help end the week on a good note. One last note of thanks to offer. Thank you to Matt out in San Francisco. Thank you very kindly, Matt, for knocking down the last $40. So we'll start Moran Monday with a clean slate. I'll go so far as to say it would be really cool if we could knock down Moran Monday and start building, you know, so that we don't have holes during the week. But anyway you slice it, it's been an excellent broadcast week, and I thank you all for the precious finite time that you share in joining in this long extended conversation that we call Conversation Radio, which in turn we call The Horn. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, John Fox. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. Like I said, we had some tough news today, And maybe we'll talk about it a little bit more come more in Monday, because I think it's time to nominate the 4th United States Circuit Court of Appeal as a collective gang of morons. And, well, always, 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 Gina. It's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.